Case number 21-5254. Donald J. Trump, in his capacity as the 45th President of the United States, appellant, versus Benny G. Thompson, in his official capacity as Chairman of the United States House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol et al. Mr. Binal for the appellant Donald Trump, jurisdiction. Mr. Clark for the appellant Donald Trump, merits. Mr. Letter for the appellee Benny Thompson. Mr. Boynton for the appellee National Archives and Records Administration.
You may proceed, Mr. Binal, and welcome everybody. Good morning.
Good morning. And may it please the court. Jesse Binal on behalf of President Trump. I will be handling the jurisdictional issues this morning. Mr. Clark will be handling the other issues. In assessing subject matter jurisdiction, this court has asked us to be prepared to answer two questions today. The first is whether this court and the district court have jurisdiction over this case, notwithstanding the limitations of the Presidential Records Act. And the second is whether the court's jurisdiction over the remedies sought by the appellant remains in light of those jurisdictional limitations. The answer to both questions is yes. Congress adopted the Presidential Records Act to provide for government ownership of presidential records. In doing so, there were several concerns that they took into consideration. The first, one of those was executive privilege and the necessity for a former president to maintain the confidences of the records created during his term of office. And the second was the need of the archivist to be able to do the archivist's job without opening the floodgates of FOIA litigation during the initial period of processing presidential records. In fact, the system created the Presidential Records Act created a buffer period starting at the conclusion of a president's term and extending for a period not to exceed.
Can I just interrupt to try to get to the bottom line here? The bottom line is that you agree that that statutory language is language that limits subject matter jurisdiction.
Judge Wilkins, the language in the statute only limits the subject matter jurisdiction of third persons. It does not limit the subject matter jurisdiction for a former president to be able to bring bring an action on behalf of maintaining the confidentiality of the president's records. And that was very specific. And in fact, if you look at the legislative history for the adoption—
Mr. Binal, before you get to the legislative history, can you just be clear about what language you're referring to in the statute?
Yes, Judge Jackson. We're talking about the language in 2204B. And in that language, it takes and specifically limits the ability of third parties to challenge a decision of the archivist as to the designation of presidential records. And then after that designation if there is a disagreement between third parties, members of the public who would otherwise be able to bring a FOIA claim, then they are limited to an administrative appeal. And that administrative appeal is then specifically provided for by regulations adopted by the National Archives.
So are you talking about section 2204B3? Because I don't see anything about third parties in that section. So I'm trying to understand where that's coming from.
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at 2204B3, what it talks about is limiting the jurisdiction to challenge the designation of the archivist regarding a former president's records. And what that, and then immediately following that limitation of that limitation in 2204B3, it then proceeds to talk about the administrative appeal process. And
but the statute says that at the first part of that sentence, after the during the period of restricted access, It says the determination whether access to a presidential record shall be restricted shall be made by the archivist. So hasn't the archivist here made a determination that certain presidential records will not be restricted?
Your Honor, the designation regarding records here is not really under 2204, it's under 2205. And that is the special requests of Congress that are at play here. But regardless, Your Honor, Congress specifically did not limit the abilities of former presidents to be able to challenge any decision regarding the confidentiality of their records.
Well, Mr. Banal, you say Congress didn't limit it. Ordinarily, when we're looking to determine whether someone has the authority to bring a lawsuit, we're actually trying to find in the statute language that gives the person that authority, right? The background rule is that Congress has to provide a cause of action for former presidents or anyone else to proceed. So where's the cause of action in this statute for the former president to be able to bring a claim protecting the confidentiality of records writ large? Where is that?
Your Honor, so there's the overall authority given by Congress, both to this court on an appeal of an injunction and over the federal question jurisdiction. And as this court recognized in the National Coalition to Save Our Mall case, there is a presumption of the ability to review those questions. That is especially important because there is not only a statutory issue here, but there's also the constitutional issue here. And that presumption then can only be rebutted by clear and convincing evidence that Congress intended to divest the courts of specific authority. And there is no such clear and
convincing. So are you arguing for it that there's an implied cause of action somehow in this statute for the president to make this sort of claim? I thought you were looking at Section E or something at one point in your brief.
Section E is not exclusive, and that's clear from Congress. As a matter of fact, Congressman Pryor on the floor of the House of Representatives made it very clear when the Presidential Records Act was adopted that this was not an exclusive limit on a former president's ability to bring jurisdiction. In fact, he said it was that subsection, speaking of 2204E, was not intended to increase, decrease, or otherwise modify the rights or privileges of a former president to bring an action. Congressman Pryor also specifically recognized that a former president may need to bring suit to challenge under another jurisdictional basis, such as a constitutional or other right.
Can I just clarify? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
Because there's two things here I want to make sure we're clear. We had sent a letter asking you all to be ready to talk about jurisdiction. The existence of a cause of action is not jurisdictional and hasn't been raised by the other parties. So that's not even something we have to decide in this case. Am I correct on that?
That's correct, Your Honor. I'm specifically talking about
the jurisdiction we have to decide. I just want to distinguish between the jurisdiction and cause of action arguments because it sounds like they're getting kind of woven together here.
Yeah, Your Honor, we're not woving those together at all. Instead, what we're doing is pointing out that specifically when Congress was deciding this act and deciding any limits of judicial review, any limits to judicial review here are very narrow. It's only applying to third parties who, primarily for FOIA purposes, may wish to limit the may want to challenge the decision of the archivist.
So let's suppose I read, your complaint cited 2204E, as Judge Jackson pointed out, as a basis for our jurisdiction. Your complaint cited that explicitly. Let's suppose we read that as saying that the only lawsuit that Congress gave the district court subject matter jurisdiction to hear is one made by a former president that his or her rights or privileges have been violated. Let's suppose that's how we read that statute. doesn't some of your complaint go beyond making that argument?
Your Honor, our complaint is based not only on 2204E. Matter of fact, our complaint...
Don't resist the hypothetical, though. Let's suppose the hypothetical is, suppose we believe that's the only basis for subject matter jurisdiction, and that's the only thing that the court has jurisdiction to hear. What then?
Your Honor, since 2204E does specifically give rise to a former president being able to challenge the designation of his records, the court would still have subject matter jurisdiction. But in this case, the subject matter jurisdiction goes beyond that, especially being that there is a constitutional privilege at stake and other constitutional concerns regarding separation of powers. And specifically, since it arises out of 2255 and the regulations enabling 2255, specifically 1270.44, and the executive order 13489, subsection 4 of that. All of those, in fact, all three branches of government have acknowledged that there's a presidential, a right of former presidents to be able to challenge the designation and release of presidential records. Congress did it through the adoption of the statute. The executive branch did it through the promulgation of...
I want to try one last time in the interest of time, but my question is, you say that there are other bases for jurisdiction. I take your point. But my question is, hypothetically speaking,
yes,
if we were to conclude that the only basis of jurisdiction is 2204E, in that the only action that we have jurisdiction here is one that an action of the archivist violates the former president's rights or privileges. So if we're working within that framework, does any part of your claim for relief fall outside of that framework?
Your Honor, no. It's read as it should be, even if that was the only grant of subject matter jurisdiction, we would still be able to get the relief that we seek, specifically the injunction that we seek, and most importantly, the injunction that we seek against the archivist from producing the records at issue.
Mr. Banal, can I just be clear, because that's really important. I looked up your PI, which was not in, or PI motion, which was not in the JA, because I was trying to ascertain what relief are you actually seeking? Are you just trying to prevent the archivist from releasing the records that the former president has designated as privileged? Or are you saying that because of all of the other reasons that you put forward, that this is illegitimate, this is partisan or whatnot, the request is overbroad, are you saying that we should enjoin the archivist from producing anything at all in response to Congress in this request?
Your Honor, we're requesting that the archivist be enjoined from producing records designated as privileged and or otherwise restricted under the Presidential Records Act. That is what we are requesting. Matter of fact, we have not objected to a number of documents being produced to the committee. It's only the subset that we have designated as being restricted or privileged.
I see. So all the talk in your briefs about overbroad legislative action, the request is too much, that there's no purpose to it, all of that really is not the point. We're focused on the designation of executive privilege.
Well, that's right, Your Honor, but that falls within privilege and restricted. But that falls
by restricted.
Restricted is the language that the Presidential Record Act uses in regards to the documents at issue here, confidential communications. So there's the statutory issue regarding the Presidential Records Act, And then there's the constitutional issues regarding privilege that largely overlap. So to answer your question, Judge Jackson, most importantly, that all those issues that you brought up go into determining whether or not these issues are or that these particular records are privileged and whether they should be disclosed.
Well, that might well be so, but that's actually not how you briefed it. So I was very confused. You seem to be making separate arguments about whether privilege applies and whether or not the legislature has the authority to proceed because it's overbroad or whatnot. You do have many places where you suggest at least that even if this president cannot express privilege or whatnot, the court should still enjoin the archivist because the legislature has acted inappropriately in this case. So I hear you taking that whole second set of claims off the table in the context of this argument.
Your Honor, I'm not taking those claims off the table at all. And instead, what I'm trying to make clear is that those interests apply both to the statutory analysis under the Presidential Records Act. They apply to the separation of powers concerns under Mazars and other cases, and certainly executive privilege that we get through Nixon versus GSA.
Right, and just to be clear, when you say, and no one's here to try to make you take anything off the table, as I understand, tell me if I'm wrong, just to make sure I understand your argument. Your argument is you have developed arguments about, you know, overbreadth, overreach by Congress, lack of a legitimate legislative purpose for these requests. And you say all of those are part and parcel of your arguments that these documents that have been designated by former President Trump for withholding from disclosure to the committee, the analysis about the legislative interests that you have spelled out is part of determining whether those documents should be withheld under either the constitutional executive privilege or the 2204A presidential communications privilege. Is that my understanding?
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's my understanding. Is my understanding correct? Sorry.
Yes.
Great. That one, right?
Yes.
That's great. Okay. There's not a freestanding objection. It's all funneled through as part and parcel of the analyses we need to undertake.
That's right. It's the overbreadth concern, of all the concerns that we raise go to each three of the bases that we're asking that these records be withheld through an injunction.
You say those three bases are?
The statutory basis under the Presidential Records Act and its enforcing regulations, the separation of powers concerns that we've raised, and the executive privilege matters that we've concerned.
As for the statutory claims, my understanding is you're focused on the, I think you said this a minute ago, the confidential communications privilege referenced under 2204A5, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And that is there any daylight in your view between what 2204A5 protects and the executive privilege, the constitutional executive privilege?
Your Honor, that's something that is we've thought a lot about and we've looked at. I think they were mainly meant to be overlapping. The biggest concern, and you can see this through the legislative history, is the expiration date of 12 years, where Congress acknowledged that executive privilege may extend beyond 12 years. Other than that, the overlapping nature of the 2204A5 and executive privilege is largely the same.
Put aside the time limit. I have an agreement about that. But as to the content of documents, given the statute's clear, it's not contracting or expanding. It's not giving you more or less executive privilege. And my understanding is presidential communications privilege has always been understood to be a component of executive privilege.
That's right. And so it's
you're not arguing that it's broader. You don't get anything. If there's something you didn't get under executive privilege, you would get it under A5. You're not arguing that.
No, Your Honor, we're not arguing that. And of course, is the constitutional privilege. There may be other parts of the analysis that go into the procedures for trying to get documents, but you know, that is also largely covered by 2205. And we would also say that this is a question that, regarding subject matter jurisdiction that should be fleshed out fully, and we understand the court's position on that. We would certainly be willing to do supplemental briefing on the issue of subject matter jurisdiction, going into the very important issues of, for instance, legislative history. Without the restrictions on time that we have here today, the court would find that useful. But it is especially important to see that under the National Coalition to Save Our Mall case, there is no specific statutory language or clear and convincing evidence of legislative intent to say that former presidents should not have the right to bring actions such as these. In fact, it's very specific. They were trying to preserve that right of former presidents. With that, I would, unless there are any further questions, I'll hand it over to Mr. Clark to handle the remainder of our issues.
My colleagues have any more questions for Mr. Bunnell?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. And I'll be mindful of everyone's time here, just because I know we went over on the jurisdictional question. But the merits of this...
We'll give you the appropriate time for your issues, because they're very important too.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. The merits of this case really come down, and it's been well briefed, but at its essence, this case comes down to whether a document or record is imbued with and maintains characteristics of privilege when it is made, or whether those characteristics are imposed upon it later when an inquiry or dispute arises under the Presidential Records Act. If the former, then the process outlined in the Presidential Records Act works very well. If it's the latter, then privilege tends to fail, and the concerns raised by Congress at the time of passage with respect to partisanizing presidential records and the process of executive privilege come into play. And that's really what it comes down to here. And
I'm not quite sure I understand your paradigm. I apologize, but
that's okay, Ernest.
I didn't think there was any question that no one's disputing that the documents. When I talk about documents, given what Mr. Bunnell said, we're referencing here the ones as to which former President Trump has asserted, and I'll use executive privilege as the umbrella term here for presidential, the statutory and regulatory one as well, we'll just call it executive privilege, and as to which President Biden has concluded that executive privilege is not justified. And as to those documents, I hadn't heard any argument from the other side that those things were not, at least at this stage, were not subject to executive privilege at the time they were created. There's nothing about this PRA process that creates executive privilege. And I thought you were asking as your alternative that there's something about this process that imposes privilege.
Well, I could have been clearer, I'm sure, Your Honor. I get that often. The idea is that making a determination with respect to privilege is something that has to look at the characteristics of the document when they were made and when they were created. And calling balls and strikes on whether or not a document is privileged or not is really much more of a technical analysis than what I believe the archivist and the Biden administration have done here. Making a kind of post hoc rationalization with respect to executive privilege instead of looking at the document as it existed at the time and making claims over these. And just to be very clear about this, former President Trump exerted privilege over asserted privilege over a handful of documents that we're talking about here. And there are the majority of documents, as Mr. Bunnell referenced, are out the door, Congress can have them. So creating a determination as to whether or not privilege exists between the two, the former president and the current president, is really what's at stake here. And
I guess I don't understand the decision made by President Biden to be that these are not the type of documents as to which executive privilege attaches, but simply like any privilege, it is a privilege that can be waived, and that it was not in interest. He said it's not in the interest of the United States to be asserting it as to these documents, as to this particular request by this particular committee for these particular reasons. So that's not saying that I've decided these are not eligible in their content for executive privilege, or that they weren't subject to executive privilege when created, but simply that President Biden has said, I'm not going to assert it as to these, I'm waiving it as to these documents. Isn't that, if we understand it that way, then it's not really a question of when you look at its content. It's simply a question, as I understand it in this case, of the current president has said it's a qualified privilege, and it's not a permanent privilege, and it can be waived, and I'm making the decision that it is appropriate to share these documents with this committee, given the vital public interest of the United States in this investigation. Now, clearly, former President Trump can disagree with that, and so the issue, as I understood it before us, was not about the content of the documents or when you look at them, but simply what happens when a current incumbent president says, I'm not going to invoke executive privilege as to these documents with respect to this particular request. He might have a newspaper asked for them or something, I don't know. But as to this particular request by the committee, I'm not asserting it. And former President Trump has said, that's wrong. You should be asserting it. You're going to hurt the executive branch if you don't assert it here. And so what do we do with this dispute between a current and a former president? Is that how you understand it? Or is there another aspect layer here I'm missing?
Well, I do think what we get into now is the process under the PRA, which I think is important to go through in that determination. But what you're fundamentally right, that the question before the court is, what rights do a former president have with respect to his or her documents with respect to executive privilege, and an incumbent president, and how do those come about? There's a
Mr. Bernal, another way of saying exactly what Judge Millett has identified, and what I think is the argument of the other side, is that this all boils down to who decides when it's in the best interest of the United States to disclose presidential records. Is it the current occupant of the White House, or the former, who does have some interest in the confidentiality of the documents? And one of the things that I took away from their brief that I'd hope you respond to is that they said that they cannot think of any other circumstance in which the former president gets to have the final say on matters that relate to present interactions about the branches of government. So, in reality, the decision is whether to accommodate the legislative branch or to resist, right? That's really what is at stake when they ask for records that are in the archives. And the administration or the government, current government, is saying, we can't think of any other situation in which the former president gets to make that call. And so maybe you can start by answering whether you know of any other situation in which the former president is the one who makes it. And similarly, why should the former president be the one to make that determination when you're talking about accommodating another branch of government? It would seem that the current president has not only the confidentiality factor that he's thinking about, but the current duty to the interests of the United States, even broader than those that the former president would be concerned about. So if we are looking at this as a who decides kind of question, is there a circumstance in which the former president ever gets to make this kind of call? And why should he under these circumstances?
So I would I'm glad you brought that up, Your Honor, because I would point the court to 44 U.S.C. 2204 in terms of where a former president gets to make the final call with respect to documents. Right in A, prior to the conclusion of a president's term of office or last consecutive term, president shall specify durations not to exceed 12 years, for which access shall be restricted with respect to information in a presidential record within more one or more of the following categories. That determination is not subject to judicial review, and it's not subject to review by the former president or by the incumbent president under a statute. That's a final determination for that 12-year period of time that cannot be overturned by the incumbent president.
Right, but doesn't 2205 have an exception? I mean, isn't 2204 about the release of documents and the restriction and delay with respect to the public? But then we have 2205, I hope I'm getting the statutes correct, that says that when either House of Congress is asking for the records, then we don't have that kind of delay. Isn't that the circumstance we're in?
Well, it is. I was really answering the question of when, at any other point, does a former president have rights that an incumbent president would not be able to exercise? And 2204 is an example of that. That's why I was bringing that up. But I'm glad under 2205, that's correct. I think it's really important to realize, though, that Congress itself limited its own ability to get documents from the archivist under 2205. And it requires a few points, right? Any cabinet of Congress to any committee or subcommittee, if they can obtain it, if such records contain information that is needed for the conduct of its business and that is not otherwise available. So if it's needed for the conduct of its business, that's where we get to it has a legislative purpose, and the requests they're making are tied to that legislative purpose. So
again, Mr. Clark, I guess I'm still confused as to why the president, the former president, gets to make that decision. It seems to me that this exception applies to the archivist in terms of its determination, his determination that when Congress is presenting a request, that it satisfies these requirements, and therefore the incumbent president, through the archivist, is deciding that, okay, this is conduct of the business, it's not otherwise available. Why is it that the former president is the one who gets to decide whether or not the statutory criteria for appropriate legislative request is satisfied?
Well, because I think, Your Honor, because it falls under the statute authorizing it, and the subsequent regulations in EO and the GSA versus Nixon grant a former president certain rights to make a first determination as to whether executive privilege exists. Then it goes to the archivist and the incumbent president to make their determination. What we're saying is that this is all either constitutional or statutory in nature. And when there's a disagreement between an incumbent president and a former president, both of whom have rights in this, it's incumbent upon the courts, Article III judges, to make a determination whether that privilege exists or not, and whether the document should be released.
Right. Can I ask, and statute sure says you get to come to court and ask us to make that decision, so you have that going. Under 2205, you've been talking about two C, the congressional provision of documents to Congress. What about, I'm going to ask you about 2B, which says an incumbent president can have access to these documents if needed for the conduct of current business and not otherwise available. So it's the same sort of two prongs that Congress has, needed for conduct of business and not otherwise available. Now, say the incumbent president is engaged in some extremely sensitive and difficult negotiations with a foreign government and wants to see the history of communications and discussions within by the former president, who also dealt with the same, you know, difficult negotiations with a difficult foreign country, and wants to see those documents to help inform. President Biden wants to, hypothetically here, this is all hypothetical, wants to use it to inform his ability to be effective in his negotiations. And so he says, I'm going to go look at those documents. Is it your position that a former president in this case, former President Trump, and hypothetically any former president, could also go to court and ask a court to enjoin the archivist from giving those documents to the incumbent president?
That's GSA versus Nixon, Your Honor. That is, and two important.
Okay, so if we're sitting here as a court, and your position is if the current president wants to see documents within the executive branch held by the archivist, a former president and needs them for pressing national security and foreign relations reasons, a former president can put a halt on that and take it into court to prevent the president from having access to information within the executive branch? I just want to be crystal clear. That's your position.
That's the position of GSA versus Nixon. And
no, that was a different statute. It was a facial challenge simply to the processing. I'm asking you here on about 2205. And this may well be your position. I'm just asking to be absolutely clear. Your position is that under the Presidential Records Act, 2205's provision for a incumbent president to get access to these records is equally subject to litigation, and courts would be called upon to decide that debate about whether an incumbent president really needs this information or should be using other sources to manage foreign affairs and national security.
Well, not to manage foreign affairs and national security.
That was my hypothetical to you, is he needs this information
Former president could sue on this. I think it's really noteworthy that that has literally never happened before, because this is the first time there's been a dispute with respect to that. Mm-hmm. And I know
it hasn't happened. That's why I'm asking.
So, and I would say that one important part of GSA versus Nixon, that is facial challenge statute, that's fine. We're talking about confidential information. In that instance, I would presume the incumbent president wouldn't be issuing this for public release or to another branch of government, and that there would be a confidential review of these documents. I can't envision a situation where something that was truly pressing, foreign policy related, that was time sensitive, that wasn't going to be released to the public or wasn't going to be released to another branch outside of the White House and the executive branch, that would arise, because I believe
you can envision that, and I can envision other hypotheticals but your point is that a court would still have to decide between incumbent president and former president on access to vital national security material, and at a court, sorry, Judge Jackson.
Okay, sorry.
And if that, in my hypothetical, the president, there was a very wounded feelings by this foreign country with which relations are extremely sensitive, because the leader of that foreign country said promises were made to me by the former president, and this is very serious ones, and there's going to be deep and serious consequences for foreign relations, military operations within our overflight rights in our country, because I think you're breaking that promise. And the foreign president, incumbent president, wanted to go and look and see what promises were made, what communications there were at the time, and discovered that the leader of the foreign country was not reporting truthfully what happened. And in fact, promises explicitly were not made. And so the president said, I need to make public, clear the air. Here's what was promised. There's no violation. I need to do this for the military and national security and foreign interests in the United States government. I need access to the transcript of that phone call, and I need to make it public, right? You were assuming it would have to be internal and confidential, not necessarily in my hypothetical. I need to make it public to protect our interests. And to be clear, your position is the former president could come in and file a lawsuit. And to challenge, I know I'm not saying who would win or not, but I'm just saying your position is the ability to file a lawsuit applies to this provision, and it would be up to the courts then at that point to decide who would prevail on the claim as to what should happen with those executive privilege documents. That's your position.
That is our position, Your Honor. Under 2205, the way it would go is the former president.
Your position. Now, tell me, Sorry, because I'm going to just jump. I'm just testing what's going on here. GSA versus Nixon says you get to go to court. Statute says you get to go to court. Will you please tell me under your theory of this statute and scheme, how are courts supposed to resolve the contest between the two? What is the legal test that we should apply? What standard of review, if any, do we apply to the incumbent president's determination? And how do we weigh the competing claims? What rule of law would you like this court to adopt to write into an opinion that says, here's going forward how, yes, you get to come to court, and here is how courts should resolve these very grave disagreements between a former president and existing president over executive privilege?
Happy to address that, Your Honor. I would say that the process would start under 2205 in that instance where the archivist would...
We're past that now. You're in court, okay? We're in court. We've gone through the process. The incumbent president said, I need it. I need to disclose this. I need to clear the air. Give it to me, archivist. The former president comes to court and says, no, I get a right to come to court and protect executive privilege. Here I am. And nobody tells us what to do next. Tell me what to do next.
So you'd apply a test, Your Honor. And again, here's the test. You'd first make a determination whether there's a critical need for the documents for the conduct of its business. Okay.
It absolutely is under my hypothetical.
Okay. Number two, is the document available? You determine if the document is available elsewhere and is Congress sought it.
It's just not under my hypothetical.
Mm-hmm. All right. Then you look at the privilege, right? Does it meet the privilege standard? Is it a privileged document? If the answer is yes, then you need to say that is the need such that the qualified privilege can be invaded? Okay. Once you're past those first two tests, I would note in those first two prongs are satisfied in your hypothetical. They're not satisfied here.
I get that. It's a hypothetical for a reason. I'm really interested in this test, so I want to make sure I got it. So you say we've gone through it. The prongs are met. It's just we're at loggerheads between the former and the sitting president on this. And you say the test is the need such that the privilege is overcome? Is this like a U.S. versus Nixon test?
That's the final prong of the test. But yes, that would be the...
The ultimate tiebreaker here, right? Because in my situation, my hypothetical, and I get you have arguments about the elements not being met in C of legitimate need and alternative avenues. You're not taking anything off the table. My hypothetical says those are both satisfied under B. And so now all we have is the two at loggerheads. And can you just tell me again your test? Is the need such that the privilege...
First, in that third prong, is the document privileged? Does it meet the privilege standard? Is it a communication?
Of course, yes.
It does. Okay. In that instance, you would then need to look at if the need is such that the qualified privilege can be invaded. One of the factors in there is confidentiality. And I think that's really important to remember from GSA versus Nixon. And if there's a compelling need, a critical need, rather, for it to come out, that could overcome that privilege. But I would note in GSA and Nixon, that was those were going to be confidentially reviewed documents. So I just think that's really important to remember. In your hypothetical, obviously that's different.
So what would the answer be in my hypothetical? If you were a judge, what would you do? Would you think that situation of national security, military, foreign relations, angry, sensitive foreign government, does that overcome it?
I don't know, Judge. I would need to know a lot more about it, but I
don't know what more you need to know. I've given you, so I'm not going to name a country. I don't think that would matter so much.
I'm not here to make a determination on that, but what I'm here to do is tell you what I think the analysis.
Ask the question another way, and I apologize, Judge Jackson. I knew you had a question. I just want to drill this down. Is there any circumstance in which the privilege could be overcome, even though the information is not guaranteed to be kept confidential? Is there any circumstance, or is your rule that there is not?
There are circumstances. I'm sure there is, and there are going to be pressing matters where it could be, but we don't have any case law that confirms that.
I know we don't have any case law, so I'm asking this question.
I don't know. calling balls and strikes on kind of ethics, non-legal ethics things aren't my bailiwick.
Non-legal ethics. To be crystal clear, I don't understand. This is not non-legal ethics. I'm talking about, can the privilege be overcome under your test? Can it be invaded? This qualified privilege be invaded?
Sure. It was invaded
in GSA. Even without confidentiality.
Even without confidentiality? Probably. I would say probably. I just can't think of a hypothetical off the top of my head where it would be.
Did you ever ask the district court for an injunction not against release, but an injunction against the House, requiring the House to keep these documents confidential?
Constitutional. I don't have my docs in front of me.
It's not in your preliminary injunction. Jackson saw something I didn't in there. Yeah. And I didn't see it in the argument transcript. So you didn't ask for that limitation to the court.
I mean, we couldn't really, Your Honor, because of the speech and debate clause in the Constitution. It would, if Congress gets something, there's nothing a court can do to stop a member of Congress.
No. Of course you couldn't do that. What you would do is you would say the archivist, an injunction of the archivist only releases it to Congress under a read-only rule or a confidentiality rule.
We did not ask for that, Your Honor, in large part because it's not, I don't believe it would be effective against Congress. Such an order wouldn't actually keep the documents confidential.
You don't think that you could ask for a protective order, and you don't think that Congress would have to be bound by a protective order?
An individual member of Congress would not have to be bound by a protective order if they were to go to the House floor and read what they had just read in a confidential setting.
So how is the test to be applied that you've suggested any different if the incumbent president also asserts privilege and there's no disagreement? Both the former president and the incumbent president say executive privilege, and we're here in that posture. Is the test any different, or is the test the same?
Well, I don't think you have a test at that point. I don't think it would get to a court if an incumbent president and the former president agreed that a document was privileged. You wouldn't need to meet any of those factors because it wouldn't come to court. The archivist simply wouldn't release the documents at that point.
Mr. Clark, that actually strikes at the heart of the question that I had in listening to Judge Millett's hypothetical, which is the assumption for the purpose of the hypothetical and your discussion that there really is a cause of action either in GSA versus Nixon or in the statute for a former president to constrict the courts into resolving a dispute between him and the incumbent president over the invocation of executive privilege with respect to these records. And I need to say that I'm not quite sure, maybe not as sure as my colleagues, that that's actually present. As I read GSA versus Nixon, that case was not about the disclosure of records, whether it be to Congress, whether it be to the public. That case, it seems to me, was about whether the former president retained a confidentiality interest in records that the statute now says belongs to the United States. So it was sort of like a property thing. The new statute comes in, they say, these records no longer belong to you, President Nixon, they belong to the United States. And he wanted to maintain and exert his interest in confidentiality over those records, notwithstanding the fact that they now belong to the United States. And I read the Supreme Court as merely saying that he has such a confidentiality interest, even though the records are in that state, that there's nothing unconstitutional about the statute that makes the records the property of the United States. That he still gets to raise it, but it's a diminished interest because he's no longer in possession of the records, that he's no longer the president. But it's really not about what happens when the current president says these records need to be released either because I want to use them, they're about a foreign government or whatever, or because Congress is asking for them. And the conflict between the two of them on the call of what happens to the record. So to the extent that you find in that case, the right to come to court to dispute the current president's ability to release the records, I don't see that in that case because that's not the circumstance. I also don't necessarily see it in the statute. So if you look at the E, which is what I thought was sort of where you were getting, this 2204E, it says that the former president can initiate, bring an action asserting that a determination made by the archivist violates the former president's rights and privileges. It doesn't say executive privilege. It doesn't say constitutional privileges. It says rights and privileges. And I think that at least one reasonable way to interpret that is that the statute itself gives the president lots of rights concerning this process. It says you get the right to review these documents. You get the right to prevent their release after before you review them in the 30-day period. You know, personal records have to be segregated out by the archivist. And so that gives you the right to say, hey, wait a minute. This record is a personal record and not a presidential record. Those kinds of things could easily be litigated by the court when the president says, the archivist is about to release a record that violates my rights and privileges. I don't think it is necessarily the case that that language encompasses the right to oppose the current president's invocation of executive privilege in court concerning the records. There's a whole set of other rights that the president could litigate, and I don't necessarily see that in this statute. So maybe you can talk about or explain to me why I am wrong that in a situation in which you have this kind of dispute between the current and the former president, there really is the right of the former president to go to court to do something about the current president's determination.
I appreciate the question, Your Honor, and I understand where you're coming from on this. I think the disagreement that I have with you and my understanding is that if you read 2204 and you identified E, and we're getting down to the determination of what a right or a privilege is, I read GSA versus Nixon as creating a constitutional right of a former president to have certain rights over his or her former documents when they were president. 2204E, I believe, codifies that right to be able to make that challenge to it. And 2204.
Right, but to be clear, even in Nixon, that right was not sufficient to overcome the public interest as identified by the current president to have, maintain, and preserve those documents. I mean, if you're right, Nixon comes out a different way, Nixon versus GSA, because the former president in that case asserts the right of confidentiality in the documents. The Supreme Court says, yes, we see that you have some right, but the current president has made a determination that you can't just take those documents and destroy them. You can't use them for your own purposes. They're now in the archives. They're the property of the United States. And he's decided that they need to be preserved, that there are important governmental and historical reasons to preserve them. So even in that case, the determination of the current president overcomes whatever confidential rights or whatnot the former president has. So I'm not saying that the former president doesn't have any right of confidentiality. What I'm saying is, what do we do and where in the case does it suggest that whatever confidential right the former president has, it overcomes the determination of the current president that it's important that these documents be preserved in Nixon, and in our case, that they be released.
I believe, and our position is that the law creates a situation where the former president's, all that matters is the disagreement between the former president and the incumbent president. Once that disagreement occurs, an Article III court has to make a determination. That's why the right to sue exists under the statute. That's why Nixon and GSA is there. And the court can give weight to whomever chooses, but balancing that test that I outlined before and determining whether there's a critical need.
You're rejecting my reading of the statute as giving the former president the right to make sure that the archivist is doing what the statute says concerning the processing of records, giving him the rights and privileges that the statute itself conveys, right, to him concerning this set of documents. That is a reading of the statute, that it doesn't say, I mean, I would expect if you were write a provision in the statute that addresses this very situation, when the incumbent president says executive privilege is waived, I'm allowing these documents to go out, and the former president says, no, no, I have executive privilege and I'm asserting it, then the former president gets to come to court and the court would decide. And in an ideal world, the court would decide, and here are the standards. This is what Judge Millett was trying to get at. Here are the standards that the court would use. None of that is in the statute. And so as a result, it makes me worry that the circumstance that you are trying to have the statute give you a cause of action to proceed under is really not what's going on here at all. That everybody, you know, we've looked at the legislative history. We see, for example, that executive orders, almost all of them, have determined that when you have this kind of conflict between incumbent and former, incumbent gets to decide, right? So I just don't know that the statute is saying, no, incumbent doesn't get to decide. Instead, take it to the court and let them be the one to decide between current and former. I don't see that in the statute.
I think you see the right to sue in the statute. And then I think the regulation at 36 CFR 1270 spot 44, section F3, outlines it a little bit more.
Sorry, can you give me that slide again, just to make sure I'm looking at
it? Yes, Your Honor. 36 CFR 1270 spot 44, section F, mm-hmm. subsection 3. If the incumbent president does not uphold the claim asserted by the former president, fails to decide before the end of the 30-day period of this section, or withdraws a decision upholding the claim, the archivist discloses the presidential record 60 calendar days after the archivist received notification of the claim, unless a court order in an action in any federal court directs the archivist to withhold the record, including an action initiated by the former president under 44 U.S.C. 2204E.
And that court action would be the one, I'm assuming that court action would be one referenced in E, which I assume was building on Nixon versus GSA, which rejected the argument that only an incumbent president may assert such claim of privilege, and hold that appellant as a former president may also be heard to assert them.
That's right, Your Honor. And that's the part of the basis of our complaint under 2204, which is why it's referenced there, because this CFR references that and also references the exceptions to restricted access, which is in 2205. So that's how I think we get there. And that's kind of what fills in some of the blanks that Judge Jackson pointed out with respect to the statute in 2204 and E.
Can you also be citing 2208 C2C?
Yes, and I don't have my copy of my statute in front of me, but yes, Your Honor.
Because that's where it says, if the incumbent president determines not to uphold the claim of privilege by the former president, then the archivist shall release the records at the end of a 90-day period, unless directed otherwise by a court order in an action initiated by the former president. So doesn't that language anticipate that the former president could bring an action like the one you brought here?
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor.
And so then in the context of that action, what this is Judge Millett's question, what is the court supposed to do. Do we start from scratch to determine which president has the right view of this? Do we look at the records? Do we, is it our determination, or does it matter that we have a current president who's made the decision? That doesn't matter. We treat them equally. There's no deference given to the current president because he's current.
I don't believe so. I think there needs to be an objective test that the court would employ. First, looking at if there's a critical need for the documents.
I'm sorry, can I just clarify your answer to Judge Jackson? When you said, I don't think so, does that mean you don't think there's any deference to the decision of the existing president? Is that what you weren't thinking so? I just want to make sure I understood the transition.
Yeah, I don't believe there is. I believe that the court needs to employ an objective test to determine which party is correct.
The Supreme Court in Nixon versus GSA was explicit that when it comes to evaluating the interests of the executive branch, that when that call is made by the incumbent president, the counter argument, the interest asserted by the former president is diminished, which sounds to me like,
well,
counts for something.
I don't disagree with that take on GSA v. Nixon at all. What I'm saying, though, is I think there are a few steps prior to that presidential determination in terms of privilege that a court would need to weigh, and that's with respect to Congress's business under 2205. So analyzing
that. Why is that?
Well, the statute, Congress limited its own ability to obtain documents under 2205, right? And it limited it to records that contain information that's needed for the conduct of its business and is not otherwise available. So I think a court needs to make a determination that there's a legitimate legislative purpose and that the requests are tied to that legislative purpose in a meaningful way.
And no deference is given to the incumbent who presumably has made that determination, because the archivist has to decide in the first instance whether this is an appropriate request, right? So the incumbent president, presumably, per the statute, has decided those two points. And so when it comes to the court now, you say that there is the opportunity for the court to make this determination. And I guess what I'm asking is, do we defer in any way to the incumbent's determination that those criteria are satisfied?
I actually don't think so. I mean, I don't think that runs in the face of GSA versus Nixon, because this is under a congressional request under the statute. So I think the demonstration of a critical need and looking at the connection between the legislative purpose and the actual requests, whether they need those specific requests to answer their legislative need, is a job for an Article III court. When there's
the court says statutory criteria are satisfied. Court agrees, put deference aside for now. The court says, defer or not, we would agree that they are met here. In a hypothetical case, I'm not going to ask you direct questions about this case, of course. In a hypothetical, in some other case, the court agrees, the president decides, incumbent president decides, the court agrees, the statutory criteria are met. And so once again, here we are, a court left with the incumbent president and the former president, really at loggerheads only about one thing, and that is the interests of the executive branch, right? That's what President Trump, he's here in his official capacity. He's not asserting any personal confidentiality interests, anything like that. He's here asserting, and this is all your arguments have talked about, the interests of the executive branch in confidentiality. And so President Biden makes one call, the incumbent president makes one call, former president makes another on the same question. The interests of the executive branch, whether they will be able to weather the storm of this waiver of executive privilege. And GSA says,
well, I think you missed one part of the test, which is that is the document available elsewhere?
I've told you the statutory criteria, not plural, are met. Okay. I'm now at those, we're past that.
GSA would say to give weight to the incumbent president and their determination.
The former president's interest and ability to evaluate the interests of the executive branch is diminished, right? We have, We have one president at a time under our Constitution. That's what GSA is saying. And that the incumbent president has said, has made the judgment and is best positioned, and the Supreme Court has told us, to make that call as the interest of the executive branch. So just as between those two arguments, former president's view of the interest of the executive branch and confidentiality of these documents, incumbent president, the president, has made the decision about the interest of the executive branch and confidentiality, given all the statutory criteria are met. What then?
We are in Nixon versus GSA, where...
Right, and Nixon versus GSA says the incumbents carries more weight. So what happens then? You lose. The former president, not you, sorry, let me rephrase. The former president loses.
If there is a question, if it only comes down to a question of the interests of the executive branch, mm-hmm. if it only comes down to that, the court has to weigh it. And under GSA versus Nixon, the court gave more weight to a former president than the or incumbent president than the former president.
So if in some hypothetical case, the court finds itself at that stage, gone through the statutory criteria, and I'm not dismissing here for a second, you have your arguments about those statutory criteria. I hear those loud and clear. But if the court moves past those, and here's the former president's arguments about the needs for confidentiality of the executive branch, and here's the incumbent president's determination, the incumbent president wins.
The incumbent president's determination gets more weight. I don't think they win. I wouldn't say that.
I thought that's what you just said. So then what happens? Okay, it's got more weight. So then what?
Well, then the court has to weigh everything. The court's got to weigh, does it meet a privilege standard? What are the contents of the documents, and what are we talking about here? Is it something
that's... We're talking about presidential communications privileges.
I mean, does it get into territory that Congress was concerned about, where they passed the law, where the archivist could be susceptible to possible pressure from the incumbent president to release embarrassing and inappropriate material concerning a predecessor or a rival, and from the predecessor?
All right, I'm sorry. Where are you reading from in the statute?
I'm just reading from the Presidential Records Act debate on the floor, which we had in the legislative history. I mean, there are other possibilities that the court could weigh, not just the incumbent president's determination.
What else should be weighed in this case? If assume we're there again, and this is just assuming we get past your arguments about, I'm not saying that we do. I understand we have to go through, in your theory, we have to go through those statutory criteria. And if we say they're met, and this is all executive privilege material, you've asserted it. They aren't disputing and you've got arguments about executive privilege. The incumbent president has made a judgment about needs of the executive branch. Incumbent president gets more points on the scoreboard on that question. What else in this case are we supposed to weigh at this point? In this case now, not hypothetical.
Well, we're not there yet on this case, because you would actually have to look at the individual documents in question.
Under what authority do you say we have to look at the individual documents?
Well, I believe a court, in making a determination on this, once we got to this final part of the test, would need to look at the documents to determine whether or not they should be released and whether or not the interests of Congress.
So you have made no particularized arguments at all. Like normally in a FOIA case, right, there's arguments focused on the particular document and the interests in it. And there's declarations. From the government, at least, about their need for privilege. The person asserting privilege has provided a declaration that's particularized to the documents at issue. We have no declaration. We have no particularization. Your thought is that without any guidance from the former president, without any insights, any declaration, any argument even from the former president, the court itself is supposed to go through and make arguments that the former president hasn't as to individual documents? That's your position in this case?
I'm not sure I follow you, Your Honor. And I only say
what arguments has your client made, or have you made in this case, that says it's an individual document? This one really, really can't be disclosed because it's about X. And this one really, really, put aside general interest in executive branch confidentiality, this one really is so sensitive, it outweighs the extra points on the scoreboard for the incumbent president. Where is that in this record?
Well, Your Honor, it's not there yet, and we're at the preliminary injunction.
Not there yet. No, I know. Well, you have the burden of establishing your right to a preliminary injunction, and you want the court preliminary injunction stage, is that right, to go through these documents?
I think the preliminary injunction is meant to withhold the documents until the court has the opportunity to go through and make a determination.
But you're only entitled to that based on an assessment of whether you have a likelihood of success on the merits, which means that you have to point to evidence that would support your contention that these documents are subject to being withheld, notwithstanding the determination of the incumbent that they should be released under these circumstances.
Right.
So Judge Blatt is saying you have not gone through and looked at the particular documents with an eye toward giving the court the argument and the evidence as to why these particular documents, when we get to the final stage of this analysis, should be withheld, notwithstanding the incumbent's determination about what is in the best interest of the United States. And let me just add that the what is in the best interest of the United States, I think, determination includes not just a look at how confidential these documents are and what is in the best interest of the executive with respect to confidentiality, but also accommodations, which is the way this is normally worked. So what I mean by that is that the incumbent president, I would think, is making a decision about whether or not to cooperate with the legislature. And that encompasses not just how confidential these are and all of the concerns related to confidentiality, but also the process of negotiation back and forth, how we're going to behave with respect to these documents or other documents in light of legislative requests. It's the co-equal branches of government in operation. And so that's a pretty weighty concern, I would think, when the executive is making a decision that it should give or shouldn't give the records. And it's a concern that is not on the table necessarily with respect to the former president. So if the former president wants to come back and say, notwithstanding a determination that the executive incumbent has made about the release of these particular documents in light of all of the things that are going on, we still say that the document should be withheld, Judge Millett is pointing out that you really have to make a showing about these records and why that's so important under these circumstances. And so where in the record have you done that?
Well, we made our claims in the complaint and in our briefing that these documents fall under traditional categories of executive privilege. And we're talking about the privilege and what's in the individual documents, what those specifically are. I mean, there will be a line where you can't go over, and then the documents are just kind of out in public in terms of what they are. But we've made, and your comment about political accommodation is really important. In this instance, the former president has made really, I think, very consistent and honest attempts to make calls with respect to executive privilege.
But that's not what your brief says, by the way. I'm surprised to hear that, because your briefs suggest, without evidence as far as I can discern, that the current president has not done.
No, I'm
you're saying the former president has done. What is your view on whether the incumbent president has exercised his duty carefully and thoughtfully? That's not what your briefs said.
No, that's right. I stand by our brief in that one, because the incumbent president has simply said that they are releasing all of the documents without a determination, or they disagree with the incumbent or the former president's determination on privilege and are releasing all the documents.
So I have a couple of questions here. The first one is, suppose in a hypothetical situation, Congress issues a subpoena to the archivist, and there's 10 categories, 10 document requests for the former president's records. And the incumbent president goes to Congress and says, you know, I'll waive privilege as to two of the 10 as an accommodation, but I'm not as to the rest. And I'll waive privilege as to two of the 10 if you agree that you'll accept that and just withdraw the other 8 requests so that we don't have any court battles. And Congress says, okay, fine, we'll take that deal. But the former president says, no, shouldn't make that deal. I'm objecting, and I want to claim privilege to even those 2 categories. Your view would be that if the incumbent president has reached an accommodation that wouldn't require court involvement, the former president could bring an action and require the court to get involved anyway, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And to, I guess, get back to the prior questioning about your argument for document by document review, it seems to me that your argument is inconsistent with our precedent, i.e. Senate Select Committee v. Nixon and Nixon v. Sirica. Because Senate Select Committee basically approved and kind of reaffirmed the prior en banc decision from Nixon v. Sirica, which said that you can make the privilege determination kind of writ large against the whole class of documents and say that the need overrides the privilege and therefore the privilege has to yield and the documents have to be produced. But there's a second step, which is that kind of akin to a Vaughn index and a FOIA case, and they cited EPA v. Mink, a Supreme Court case. They said that, like, if as to a particular document, the president were to say, well, that one isn't really responsive to the request, or it's really sensitive because it's got personal information or kind of there's some other kind of extraordinary circumstance where that document should be redacted or maybe a substitute should be produced, then you can, like, make those individual requests, but you essentially have to prepare something like a privilege log or a Vaughn index where you say, as to these documents, they shouldn't be produced because they're not really responsive or there's personal information or some other, you know, kind of compelling reason why, even though privilege has been overcome, we want you, court, to look at those in camera, and here's our argument for why those shouldn't be produced. That's what Nixon v. Sirica says. That's our precedent. And you haven't done that. You're just saying the court just has to go through every document by document and determine individually whether the privilege should obtain, but that's not the way we say we do this, at least the way I read those cases. Tell me why that's wrong.
I don't necessarily disagree with your reading of those cases, but what I would say is that this is the first time under this statutory scheme that we've dealt with this situation. And the only process I see in terms of being able to do this in an appropriate way is for a court ultimately to look at these documents. And here's why, Judge. I think under the process of the PRA, the way it works is first the former president receives the documents to do a review and assert their privilege. If you, I believe they're on NARA's website. I could be mistaken, but the letters are out there. The former president then sends a letter to the archivist outlining essentially what you disclosed. There are situations where something was withheld because it wasn't a presidential record. There were certain documents that a decision with respect to those were deferred. And those are outlined in that letter from the former president. The documents then, well, it's not one after the other, but at some point after the former president receives them, the incumbent president receives those documents and does their own review and issues a letter after the former president does in response to that. And that's what we have here. The process then really turns to us, the former president, going to court at that point. And so that's where we are in the process right now. And I don't necessarily disagree with you that a priv log or something like that would come up, but we're under a statutory scheme and kind of what we have.
I don't see anything. I'm sorry, counsel, but there's nothing in the statute that says that the privilege determination has to be made on a document by document basis. What we have in our precedent, and, you know, the court didn't listen to the tapes before they determined that privilege had been waived in Nixon. Didn't have to listen to the tapes to determine whether, you know, there was a privilege or the privilege was overcome. They knew basically what was the subject matter discussed in the tapes, and they knew what the legislative or the purpose was for the grand jury to have the tapes, and they made the call. And they made the call kind of on a categorical basis, but they said, but look, to the extent that there's like a particular aspect of the tape or a particular aspect of a document, then you can raise whether that's really responsive to the request or whether you need the whole document or the whole tape or you redact it because of some sort of sensitive nature. But that's a second step. That's after the determination that of whether or not the privilege has been overcome. Because if the privilege hasn't been overcome, like it wasn't in Senate Select Committee, you don't get to that second step. You just say, there's no, the privilege obtains and it hasn't been overcome, so Congress doesn't get the tapes in that case. So you seem to be blurring the kind of two steps, and that's what my concern is. Can you respond to that, please?
Yes, Your Honor, and I understand your concern on that. I just, when you get down to, there needs to be some review, whether it's a general view of the contents or something, of these documents by an Article III court to see whether it fits within a privilege category once you get to that third step of the analysis. I don't know how to
clarify something. I don't mean to interrupt your response, but when you say whether it falls within a privilege category, so are you asking the courts to look at them to see whether, to verify whether former President Trump was accurate in asserting executive privilege? That's all?
I think you have to in that third step.
Let's say the court instead says, I'm going to give you that these are all executive privilege documents. But you said this comes after the incumbent president has waived executive privilege. And that doesn't make sense to me. And you agree that under Nixon versus GSA, in that, you know, whether it's in the interests of the executive branch, a long-term interest, in the interest of the United States, not to assert executive privilege here, Nixon versus GSA is quite explicit, more points on the scoreboard for the incumbent president in the weighing analysis. And so it doesn't matter at that point if we stipulate that these are executive privilege. I don't see where that gets you if a court looks and goes, yeah, they're executive privilege. We could look at them all. We could look at them all and say, yep, they're all fall within executive privilege. We'll credit for former President Trump's assertion of that, but that doesn't change the balance that Nixon versus GSA already struck on that very issue.
But you have two steps prior to that a court needs to review. Before you get to that analysis, one is the critical need analysis in terms of...
Please stop. Because here's where we've been, I thought, through this argument. All right? We are assuming the statutory criteria have been met. We're assuming that they've been met. We're stipulating that those have been met. All right? And we're now in court. I'm back where I was. The former president are loggerheads as to the interests of the executive branch of the United States. And the incumbent president wins that debate under Nixon versus GSA, right? Gets to make that call under Nixon versus GSA. The former president just isn't in a position to do that. And then you say, well, now let's look at the document to see if they really are executive privilege. It doesn't matter because the incumbent president has said, I agree these are executive privilege. Or even if I agree or I agree, I am not choosing to exercise that privilege. So it changes the analysis not a whit for a court to spend time going, yeah, executive privilege, not executive privilege. It's been waived. Is that what you want? You want the document review just to determine whether these are executive privilege documents or not?
No, to make a determination as to whether the qualified privilege of executive privilege should be invaded.
Okay, but so that's again where it seems like it's the burden is on the former president to come forward with some reason as to why, notwithstanding the extra points on the scoreboard for the incumbent president on making a judgment about waiving executive privilege, then the former president's going to have to come back with some interest, something that's missed in that calculation, some supervening interest. And it won't be enough to go, see, I told you it was executive privilege. See, I told you it was an executive privilege document. You're going to have to come up with something more powerful that's going to outweigh the incumbent president's decision to waive, right? You're going to have to change the score on that scoreboard.
So for example, Mr. Clark, you could say with respect to these particular documents, there's going to be some concrete harm to the executive that I'm identifying, presenting to the court, explaining, but it's sort of in the same vein as Judge Wilkins and Judge Millett have been talking about, because you come back and you say, here it is. This is why, even though the incumbent president wants to waive the privilege, it needs to stay in place and I need to be able to prevent these documents from being released. Here's the concrete harm that this particular document will cause if it goes out to Congress.
The harm here is the constitutional harm to the executive branch, which I know we've discussed. I don't believe that I've raised this except at the beginning of my argument that the former president's determination with respect to privilege in some instances is going to be a better determination with respect to privilege because of the context of conversations, of documents, of records, whatever. And the court needs to weigh those. I mean, again, in 2204, a former president can't waive, or any, sorry, I keep mixing those terms up. An incumbent president can't waive a former president's determination of privilege assertions to the public for a 12-year period of time. The archivist shall not disclose records. In that instance, we've said, yeah, former president not only has rights, but knows better.
Sure, but 2205, where Congress or an incumbent president asks for them, says notwithstanding 2204. Okay.
But all I'm saying with this, Your Honor, is that it's evidence that there are going to be instances where a former president is going to know context and issues better than an incumbent president with respect to certain documents.
And Judge Wilkins points out, and as I tried to point out before, that the incumbent president will know better the needs of the executive branch with respect to accommodation of the legislature, right? The briefs from the appellees talk about the fact that the incumbent president has the current present relationship with Congress and is taking into account not only the confidentiality interests as put forward or expressed by the former president, but also other things. Judge Wilson's hypothetical was exactly that. We're making a deal, says the current president, about the release of these records. So why then would it be that the court should preference the former president's concerns about confidentiality, even though he may have the superior knowledge of what the documents were about or whatnot? We're in a different world today because we have a different president who's taking into account not only confidentiality, but other things.
There are considerations such as, if we look at a document and it's going to be an embarrassment to a former president, if it's meant to cause political turmoil, it's what Congress itself was concerned about in its passage of the PRA when it passed it. There are factors, and there are going to be factors, that a court needs to weigh in determining whether a document or a series of documents need to be disclosed. And that's really what we're saying here in terms of the reviewing documents. We're not talking about any,
but you've made no showing on this record in support of your preliminary injunction motion that the documents at issue on these first three tranches involve that, any of those concerns.
If we raised it specifically as to the category.
We've raised it with respect to the categories of documents that are there.
You've raised what?
We've raised concern about categories of documents that were concerns,
but you all have looked, you or someone on your side of the table has actually looked at these documents. And I've seen nothing in your briefs or arguments, certainly no declaration, but even in your briefs or arguments that says, look, as to five of these documents, they will do nothing but finish the sentence.
That's fair, Your Honor. That is not specifically in the record with specificity on each document.
But you just say you have concerns, and your concerns have come up with, I think, generally in your concern about the global reach of this congressional request.
Well, yes, because there are concerns with the breadth of the request, which I'm sure you'll get into with opposing counsel. But the concern here is we are on a timeline in terms of a 30-day timeline. And getting a preliminary injunction so we can hash out these issues is really important on our end. And that's where I think we are.
Mr. Clark, we've kept you up a very long time. I'm sure you'd like a drink of water or something warm, but I have to say, I'm sorry, Judge Wilkins, I think I jumped in on the answer to your question, so I didn't know if you needed to follow up. I apologize. I was just trying to understand what he was saying.
No, that's fine. I guess what I'm trying to get at, counsel, is, or kind of switching gears for a second, any privilege can be waived. The attorney-client privilege can be waived. So why is the executive privilege different in that you agree that the executive privilege can be waived as a general matter, right?
Yes.
So your argument is that the incumbent doesn't have the absolute right to waive the privilege. The former president can object and say, no, I don't want to waive the privilege. And then the court has to decide whether the incumbent's desire to waive the privilege should be given effect. Is that the way we should look at this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
So in determining whether to give effect to the incumbent president's desire to waive privilege, you say that we should use a test that is essentially the same as the test that we would use if the incumbent president said, I'm not waiving privilege, and this were just a fight between Congress and the incumbent and former presidents over whether the executive privilege has been overcome. You're basically saying we should use the exact same test, aren't you?
I think it's similar for sure. I don't think it's the exact same, Your Honor, because you've got a statutory scheme in this instance that you follow. But boy, they're very similar to the Supreme Court's precedent, Mazars and others, with respect to a fight between the executive branch and Congress over
the review. Why should it be the same test? As if like the incumbent president's determination to waive privilege like didn't happen at all, is irrelevant, doesn't matter. Why should we use the same kind of balancing test in this context?
I think in many ways you are, but I don't think it's the exact same only because you've got statutory language here, Judge. That's the really big distinction here with respect to any test and release of documents.
All Right. And I will, just following up on an earlier exchange you had with Judge Jackson, I do think it is to the credit of former President Trump that he has been discerning in going through these documents and hasn't sort of done a global assertion of privilege. That means that these documents have all been carefully looked at and thought about on your side. And that's good for the process, after all. My colleagues don't have any more questions at this stage, and I think we've held you a little bit over your time, but we will still give you, I promise we will still give you some rebuttal time.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from Mr. Letter. Hang on, you're not muted yet, Mr. Clark, before you start whispering.
May it please the court. I'm Douglas Letter, the general counsel of the U.S. House of Representatives. With me today, I was going to say in the courtroom, but in the room here are Eric Columbus and Stacey Fossil from the House General Counsel's Office, and Mary McCord, Annie Owens, and Joseph Mead from the Georgetown Law Center Institute for Constitutional Advocacy and Protection. What I wanted to do was just make a short point up front, and then I was planning to go through and respond to various questions that the court has posed, but obviously we'll interrupt that at any point with other questions that you have. I think it is very important, given the argument that has been made today, to remember what Chief Justice Marshall said in United States versus Burr. Said the president, quote, is elected from the mass of the people, and on the expiration of the time for which he is elected, returns to the mass of the people again, end quote. And Judge Chutkan's decision certainly picked up on that. And we really do have, as one of your honors observed a little while ago, we have one president at a time. And the argument being made here by Mr. Trump just doesn't give that sufficient weight.
Well, I mean, to be fair, right, we do have one president at a time, but the Supreme Court has told us that at least as to this question of executive privilege and confidentiality within the executive branch, that claim can be asserted by a former president, even when not asserted by the incumbent president.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor.
Burr doesn't get us to that point. So, yeah.
However, as we know, that's absolutely right, Your Honor. I was interrupting you to say, but as we know, as the Supreme Court set out in Nixon versus GSA, it is the views of the current president that are so obviously paramount, in part because of the very hypothetical that you raised, Your Honor. You can easily envision circumstances when the current president is making determinations about national security, foreign affairs, et cetera. And it has to be in that circumstance that we have.
I get that, here's what I find so difficult here, because Nixon versus GSA said the former president can shoot. The statute says, even when the incumbent president is not asserting the privilege, the former president could go to court, right? There could be a court order that would interrupt disclosure. And what I'm grappling with is assuming, and that's something to be talked about, I'm sure, but assuming statutory criteria are satisfied, in your view, what type of showing would a former president need to make to be able to prevail over the views of an incumbent president? Because it seems to me quite silly. I don't think Supreme Court was being silly in Nixon versus GSA, and I assume Congress wasn't being silly in recognizing that the incumbent president could persuade a court to stop a disclosure. So it can't be that y'all go to court and we go, incumbent president wins. Thank you for playing. There'd be no point to the lawsuit. So what is envisioned? What type of showing is it that a former president can make that will overcome the decision or even the indecision, the staying silent of a former president on, of an incumbent president, excuse me, on the privilege? What can overcome? And how do courts review those competing claims?
Right. Your Honor, a couple of responses. One, an indecision case might raise totally different factors. It's not clear to me that maybe we can come up with a hypothetical where the current president is just extremely busy overseas, whatever, and so some raises in a situation very different from this one, where the current president has looked at the very documents that are at issue and made a specific determination about them. In those circumstances, Your Honor, we have thrown around various hypotheticals that are, we find it very difficult to come up with anything that's realistic when the views of the current president, the determinations by the current president would not govern. I'm guessing that again, that we can come up with some extremely strange hypotheticals that don't have much to do with reality.
You're representing, you know, at least the House of Representatives, which is half of the entity that enacted this statute. And it specifically envisions a former president being able to obtain a court order over the contrary views of the incumbent president. And I assume it wasn't because they were envisioning the sort of inconceivable hypotheticals that you're talking about.
Your Honor, I think
something realistic in the statute.
A couple of things, Your Honor. One is the former president could sue to challenge determinations made by the archivist about, you know, what is within the restrictions or not within the restrictions. So that's one thing that the former president could do without challenging some determination by the current president about executive privilege. Two, as I said, maybe there are some circumstances when the current president just has not weighed in at all. That could pose
But that's not the statute. The statute is if the incumbent president determines not to uphold. So it's not I was giving you both options in case you had something to offer me. We're talking, the statute itself is really talking about the two being at loggerheads.
Yeah. And Your Honor, again, if, for example, I think we've mentioned, if there's some situation when the current president is acting in a way that is so far outside the realm of how a president is supposed to act. And for whatever reason, if he's not being impeached, maybe the Congress is of the same party or some one of the houses or something, but is acting so far outside the realm of what is reasonable.
What about if it's January 21st, a new president has come in, and new president says, "I won," and Congress is in control of the same party as the White House. They're all the same party, and every committee of the House and the Senate and every subcommittee starts lobbing in document requests to the archivists for everything covering all 4 years of the prior presidency or 8 years, whichever it was. And the current president and the new president says, "I disagreed with everything that former president did, everything they stood for. I thought it was a travesty for the American people. And I think it's in the interest of the United States that every single executive privileged document be released to these committees and to the public. Go do it." And just because I disagree with everything that person did and stood for and said. And so it's in the interest of the United States, in the new president's judgment, to release everything. Needless to say, the former president comes to court. Hang on. What happens?
I think the current president would prevail in those circumstances, Judge Millett, because the current president would have made what could be totally reasonable and rational judgments that what the current president, what the former president did is so outrageous, maybe fomented an insurrection against the Congress of the United States.
No. We're not going to make it that easy. All right. So we're going to talk instead. It says it's in the interest. You know, I won by a landslide. American people really are unhappy with what happened. And so I am going to avenge the people of the United States on this president. I'm going to avenge them.
Yes,
Your Honor. Your desire is to see all these documents. They're all coming out.
Excuse me, Judge Millett, are you talking about in this hypothetical release to the public or release to
both? Every committee asks, I'm going to give it to all the committees and I'm going to give it to the public. Both.
Yeah, Your Honor, the hypothetical, the way you've now framed the hypothetical, it seemed to me that the former president would have a strong argument that could be made
What would that argument be? Because the current president will have said it's in the interest of the United States and the people of the United States to see all this. I'm going to avenge their interests by this person that they resoundingly voted out of office. You know, it was a complete electoral landslide in my hypothetical. All right. I've made that judgment. And so what's the court supposed to do? That's not look at motives? Are we supposed to say, well, you got the interests of the American people, the interests of the public wrong? You weren't careful enough. What is a court supposed to say?
Right. And that's why your hypothetical is frankly a very difficult one. Let me analyze to go through it. Remember that the Supreme Court recognized this in part by saying, we assume that a current president will be aware of the institutional interests of the presidency, given that the current president realizes that at some point he or she is going to be a former president, and therefore that will act as some sort of break on that. Two, however, if in your hypothetical, it's the current president saying, I want to punish that guy I beat. I just want to punish him. And so I'm going to make sure that everything is known.
Well, I think it's in the interest of the United States
to
have this response.
Right. And that's when
your punishment makes it too easy. Right.
That's but I was giving. See, I was trying to say why Congress might have come up with this.
Mr. Letter, I thought your answer was going to implicate the one situation that Mr. Clark pointed to. That is the difference between 2204 and 2205, which is in a situation like the one Judge Millett hypothesizes, Mr. Clark suggested that 2205 would give the former president the right to say, these documents cannot be released to the public for a certain period of time. And that what we're dealing with here is the exception and the extent to which Congress gets the records, notwithstanding that, and different president determinations about whether to give them to Congress. And so am I wrong about, like, could we accept Mr. Clark's reading of 2204 to be that in a situation in which there's a dispute between the former and current president over release to the public, Congress has made the determination that the former president would get to decide which records get released over time in the way that the statute says. Maybe the former president wins that battle, but that's really not what's happening in a government request kind of situation.
I think you're right, Judge Jackson, that those are two different situations, and it might therefore be that in a situation involving simply a release to the public, there might be circumstances when the former president could sue and could prevail. Hypothetically, again, there would be something so far outside our experience as a nation. But you, as your hypothetical is coming up with, if instead this is a request from Congress, we believe that the 2204E provides that the former president can raise a claim about privilege. They can raise a claim, but overwhelmingly, the current president is going to prevail in that kind of circumstance. And as I say,
again, my hypothetical was the answer with respect to the statutory claim as to public release. What's the answer to the hypothetical as to release to the member, to the committees of Congress, from my hypothetical about it's in the interest of the people of the United States to avenge ourselves on what happened for the last 4 years?
And I'm sorry, Judge Millett, I wasn't sure I heard. You're saying this is when it's a request
to, what happens when he comes to court with respect to count one, don't release them to the committees.
Oh,
I've asked for everything under the sun. Every committee has thrown something in and they got all 4 years pretty well covered here. What's the response?
So if it's a request by Congress, it seems to me that overwhelmingly the current president would prevail. But I'm willing to say, I don't want to say never. I don't want to get
you caught up. You can't conceive of an ever, and you're not willing to say that my hypothetical would be an exception.
Your Honor, I can conceive. I don't think I can conceive of a realistic one.
The counsel, whether or not the incumbent president would prevail, doesn't really tell us how a court should determine whether the incumbent president would prevail. I mean, we don't just flip a coin or draw straws or something. What test are we supposed to use?
And Your Honor, putting aside the highly unrealistic hypothetical, I think the test is rather clear. It is the current president is in the best position, best by far, to determine what is in the interests of the executive branch at that time. The current president has weighed, as the Supreme Court indicated, we assume the current president takes into account that there are benefits provided by executive privilege and so how those should be carried out. And then but the current president makes a determination, as this president did, bringing it back to this case. This president, as we know, said, we have an extremely strong interest here in the select committee being able to carry out this investigation as part of its legislative duties, responsibilities. And therefore, in that situation, the court should do is say, the current president has spoken, and that's it. We're done.
Mr. Letter, can I test something? Because I'm still interested in the language of the statute and the provisions that my colleagues have pointed out with respect to the former president's ability to bring a claim. What I'm noticing is that the statute, and I'm looking right now at 2208, C2C, which I think Judge Wilkins previously raised. It says, if the incumbent president determines not to uphold the claim of privilege asserted by the former president or fails to make a determination, the archivist shall release the presidential record subject to the claim at the end of the 90-day period, unless otherwise directed by a court order. And then this is the part that is I'm sort of homing in on. In an action initiated by the former president under section 2204E of this title, or by a court order in another action in any federal court. So to the extent that the former president is relying on the first part of that, a court order in an action initiated by the former president, I am wondering whether it is possible to interpret a court action initiated by the former president under that statute, not to actually be putting the two presidents at loggerheads on the broad question of executive privilege, but to be a claim about whether the archivist has followed the rules with respect to what the statute gives the former president in terms of the amount of time or whatever else. It seems like it's very qualified language. The Congress is saying an action initiated by the former president under that section. And that section doesn't talk about constitutional rights or the extent to which the president can make the a different call on executive privilege than the former. So in my like hypothetical analysis of this, it would seem that the president can raise a constitutional claim, the former president, the incumbent president takes a look, says, you know what, for whatever reason, accommodations or anything else, I'm not going to invoke it. I'm going to waive it. And then to the extent that the former president still wants to say that those records should not be released, he can make a claim under 2204E about the practices of the archivist or whatever else, and the court can review that because then we'd have standards, right? The statute actually says what is supposed to be done in a circumstance procedurally related to the records. So if the president has claims about those sorts of things, notwithstanding the incumbent's view of executive privilege, then he can raise it. Now, I don't know what to do about the second part of this by a court order under in another action. And maybe that's where we get to, you know, the former president raising the executive privilege claim in federal court. But I think I can still read 2204E as allowing the former president to make a kind of claim about the rights and privileges that the statute itself provides in an effort to prevent the release of documents that he believes are privileged or whatever else. Do you understand what I'm saying? That was a long-winded question, but what do you think about that? Am I misreading 2204? Do you concede that E allows for the executive privilege claim brought by the former president in contrast to what the incumbent president has said?
As you recognize, it's a long question. I can't give yes, no, but exactly. Yes, a lot of what you say is correct. But remember, 2208 is specifically the provision that talks about disclosure to the public. So 2208 does not apply to this case. But you've said if there were instead a claim under 2208, yes.
That helps my scenario even more. So we don't even have the language of or another court order. We have only E. And if I'm reading E to mean, Mr. Former President, you can claim that the archivist didn't give you enough time, that you know, as the statute requires, or that this is a personal record, not a presidential record, and you can come to court. If I'm reading it that way, then we don't really have a world in which the court is resolving a direct confrontation between the two presidents on the question of executive privilege, right?
I believe so, Your Honor. But again, I want to emphasize, yes, that we're under 2208, but so yes, there are hypothetical situations in which a court could rule on certain things, depending on what, you know, the current and former president have down said or nothing.
I mean, that would mean that we don't have a situation that my colleagues are worried about. Presumably, hypothetically, that the court is being called upon to decide who has the better of the executive privilege issue. The incumbent will win because he's made the determination. And the only thing the former president can complain about in court is whether and to what extent the rights and privileges that are listed in the statute have been followed.
Yeah. And again, Your Honor, I want to be very clear on this because this is very important. Yes, there may be claims that a former president can make in court under 2208 involving requests from the public for access. What we have though here is a request by Congress. So this is covered by 2204E and 20, which must be read in conjunction with 2204C2, which, as you know, says nothing shall be construed to confirm, limit, et cetera, expand the constitutionally based privileges available to a former president. So that is executive privilege. So it's an executive privilege claim that would be brought under 2204E. And remember that the statute, a different statute, but in many ways related, GSA, contains similar language, where the Supreme Court thought that privilege meant executive privilege. So if I may, just to summarize again, if we have a case like this one, where it's a disclosure to Congress, that's governed by 2204, E, 2204C2, et cetera. And that means that the former president can raise privilege claims. As we've said, the current president should overwhelmingly win any of those if they are indeed at loggerheads, as they are.
There's no question of the cause of action. And in fact, one of the statutory terms is the presidential communications privilege. So both as a statutory claim and a constitutional claim, they're both here under 2204E2. And as you said, all read in light of 2204C, we're not withdrawing anything under the statute that is constitutionally based, which Nixon versus GSA tells us includes that the former incumbent has as one of right or privilege, whichever way you look at it, to address and raise claims of executive privilege. So we do, in fact, the statute does create the very loggerheads, assuming we get past the statutory criteria that are argued about by your friends on the other side.
I'm sorry, Judge Wilkins, did I interrupt? I'm sorry. I thought I heard a voice. I may have been wrong.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I'm hearing voices. That's all. The statute doesn't tell you what to do. That's where I believe the Constitution tells you what to do, because the Constitution, for instance, as we cited our brief, silo law says what many Supreme Court decisions have said. We have one president who runs the executive branch. Nixon versus GSA, I'm sure, you know, we've all read it backwards and forwards for this case by now at least six times, says, yes, the former president can raise that claim, but I want to come back to that in just a moment, can raise that claim, but the current president holds sway there, certainly. Now,
I wish they had, but what they said is that the former president's claim is
give greater weight,
they make the diminished or something like that.
And
so
I
suggest that there's still balancing to be done. And so,
And there may very well be, Your Honor, in various cases, because remember, Nixon versus GSA also was quite different from this case, because it was a broad challenge to a new brand new statute. In this situation, we have the current president. In those cases, in that earlier case, it was two former presidents who said the statute.
Okay, so back to my original hypothetical about the avenging one. So a former president comes into court and says, wait, you're releasing information. I have in these executive privilege documents the identities of foreign agents of foreign governments who are adversarial foreign governments who are cooperating with us and helping us. And it's going to get out and they're going to die and we're going to lose all that information that we need. And so, yes, incumbent president, you have made this judgment about the executive branch's interests and the interests of the people of the United States. And so I'm lower on the scoreboard or lower on the scales, but I'm coming to tell you there are, you know, there's eight specific things that are so vital and are not reflected in this generalized assertion of the interests of the people of the United States that have yet to be taken into account that need to be weighed by a court, including people will die. Could the former president win then? At least for those documents?
I I think, yes, Your Honor, that may be a circumstance when the 25th Amendment would suddenly become relevant. I'm not sure, but remember,
I'm talking about the 25th Amendment. I'm talking about the balancing that the court's doing.
No, I understand. But by, as we know, presidents have to make determinations regularly when people will die. The president is the commander in chief, and the president could, you know, a former president decides to send troops to a particular area. And then the new president, let's say that new president won on the basis, the key issue in that campaign was, I'm bringing the boys home, boys and girls. I'm bringing the troops. Thank you. I'm sorry, Your Honor. That was insensitive of me. I'm bringing the troops home. And that may mean that people will die. Nobody would possibly say that the current president is not the one who makes that determination. As we know,
I'm only talking about the executive privilege as to documents, right?
Right. Documents, records, materials, obviously it can be tapes, et cetera.
Yes, of course.
But again, that's the decision by the current president, except in some weird hypotheticals that maybe we can come up with, which, as I say, might very well raise questions about the president's sanity or something. But certainly that's nowhere close to anything we've ever faced as a nation.
So if the former president comes in and says, I beg to differ on your judgment about the interests of the American people and the long-term, immediate, short-term, medium, and long-term impact on the executive branch of this sweeping waiver of executive privilege that you're doing, I think you're very wrong to do it. You're misguided. You're doing it for all the wrong political reasons. You really are going to end up hurting the executive branch, but nothing more particular than that. That tie under Nixon versus GSA goes to the incumbent president.
Always, Your Honor. And the one other point I wanted to make about Nixon versus GSA is, remember too, that what that case was about, that was a situation where up until then, presidential records belong with the personal property of the president. Sadly, many presidents destroyed their records. And the Supreme Court notes this in the GSA opinion. Congress then makes a major change and says, we need these records preserved because President Nixon otherwise is going to destroy these records. And so we are changing things. And so President Nixon was suing really in his personal capacity, saying, no, these are my records, 180 or 70 degrees, years of history show that. And this is a major change. Now, so his claim was really quite different from now.
Counsel, I think, though, that there was a threshold issue that was raised that the Supreme Court decided that impacts how we should interpret what we're doing here today. There was a threshold issue made, argument made, that there was no separation of powers concern in Nixon v. GSA because you had bicameralism and presentment. The Congress had passed this bill. President Ford had signed it. The incumbent president, you know, agreed with Congress on the action that should be taken with respect to these tapes. And so this didn't really present a separation of powers issue. And the Supreme Court flatly rejected that.
Yes.
And said, it doesn't matter that the incumbent president agreed with this action. The former president still has this right to raise executive privilege. And yes, we say that it gets less weight than the incumbent president's view on executive privilege. But to resolve the separation of powers concern there, they did a balancing test. They said only where the potential for disruption to the executive is present must we then determine whether that impact is justified by an overriding need to promote objectives within the constitutional authority of Congress. It's essentially the same sort of balancing test that was done in U.S. v. Nixon, that we did in Select Committee versus Nixon, that kind of is the overall kind of like balancing that is done, that was done by the Supreme Court in Mazars, you know, compelling need or the need of Congress, is it sufficient to override the privacy interests, the interests of the executive? Right. You're saying that we don't do a balancing. We just say, you know, we weigh the incumbent more. So what if, like, there's four former presidents that say these documents should remain privileged? It would be terrible. Would destroy the office of the executive to waive privilege. But the incumbent says, no, I think that privilege should be waived. The four former presidents, does that equal one incumbent president? We don't do a weighing. I mean, why don't we do a weighing of the interests? If Nixon v. GSA did a weighing of the interests, why don't we do one here?
Yeah, because, Your Honor, there's a very key difference. First of all, the quick answer to I think it was a rhetorical question, but four former presidents versus one incumbent. No, that's easy. The incumbent obviously wins. But the difference is, there's a very central difference between the Nixon case and this case. There, the former president was suing as you point out, a separation of powers claim and separately an executive privilege claim. And the Supreme Court said he loses on the separation of powers claim. This case, remember, is not about the president making a claim in his personal capacity saying, I own those records. We know he does not own those records. And by the way, remember, not only was Nixon making that argument, Nixon turned out to be right because he later obtained compensation from the United States government because he did own those records until Congress changed the law. Here, Mr. Trump has said absolutely clearly in his brief, he is suing in his official capacity.
But I don't understand what difference that makes. My point is that the Supreme Court said that this statute raises a separation of powers concern.
Right. And this does not.
Even though President Nixon isn't in office anymore.
This case does not raise a separation of powers issue because the president, President Biden, the only head of the executive branch and the legislative branch are in complete agreement here. So there is no clash. There is no separation of powers.
That same argument was made in Nixon v. GSA. They said there's no clash because this statute, which is being challenged as facially unconstitutional, was signed by the incumbent president and passed by Congress. So where's the clash?
The
court said there is still a clash.
But again, remember, the clash there was because former President Nixon was saying those papers are mine. President Trump is not saying that. He can't say that.
But the personal, his argument that the papers are mine didn't present a clash between Congress and the office of the presidency. It presented a clash between his personal property rights and the law.
Right. And let me, though, if I can just jump to, I've made the point, we think they are different, but in any event,
okay, hang on that same. Well, before you, in any event, as part of the separation of powers analysis, it's a separation of powers analysis, notwithstanding the views of both President Ford and the Carter administration that defended the law. It seemed important to them that this law does not make the presidential materials available to the Congress. That was cited as part of their balancing of the separation of powers there. And this statute quite expressly does.
That's right.
So does that not change So for some reason, they thought we're still going to balance separation of powers, even when the political branches, incumbent political branches, are in agreement. We're still going to balance here. And this time, balance, there's a different weight on the balancing, because this does make documents available to Congress.
Right. Then the fact that this does make them available to Congress, you're right, is a difference between the two. The fact remains that the only claim under the statute that the president can raise is his privileges. And so he can make an executive privilege claim. And as we and the current president, so there is no clash here between the branches. President Trump says, Mr. Trump says, I'm suing in my official capacity. And what we're saying is, you really have basically no official capacity here, except under the statute, you are allowed to make an executive privilege claim, which again was allowed in Nixon versus GSA.
Nixon versus GSA, I guess I'm confused by your concession that this wasn't about Congress's needs or interests or whether or not Congress could have access to the documents, because I had understood the Supreme Court, at least in part, stating that adequate justifications were shown for the limited intrusion into executive confidentiality, and that among those interests was Congress's interest in preserving the materials, to restore public confidence, Congress's need to understand how political processes had in fact operated. And that's why the Supreme Court suggested, at least in this part of the opinion, that the intrusion on confidentiality of the executive was justified because Congress had made the determination that these records needed to be preserved and treated as public records, not private records, because it may need them to facilitate a full airing of the events leading to his resignation, that there were important governmental and historical reasons for the preservation of the records. So there, it seemed to me that the Supreme Court was contemplating that Congress could access these records, the public may access these records, and that's why it was constitutional in the separation of powers balancing to have a statute that says these records are public records, they belong to the United States and not to the president. Am I wrong about that? I mean, there was a congressional interest in this.
Your Honor, you are exactly right. And Frank, I was about to make that point. Yes, you're exactly right. And in fact, let's look at the other highly relevant case here, U.S. versus Nixon. You know, Mr. Trump here makes the same claim. Well, U.S. versus Nixon was about simply an in-camera inspection by a judge pursuant to a criminal trial subpoena. But remember, the whole point of the criminal trial subpoena was the court would then do an in-camera inspection, which would that could then lead to that it would be publicly disclosed as part of a criminal trial. So in both U.S. versus v. Nixon and in Nixon versus GSA, both of those cases had as part of the background that can't be forgotten that it wasn't just about disclosure within the executive branch or disclosure simply to a judge to make a determination about based on an in-camera inspection. It was about something much larger than that, as you have correctly pointed out. All I was going to do, Judge Millett, is saying, make these points, but in any event, we and President Biden here win anyway. If you're going to do any kind of balancing, the balance is the interest of the executive branch versus the interest of the legislative branch. And that's where I come back to, and I will not be shaken from, there is no clash here between the branches. The president has made a decision that he explained about the important interests of the American people in having the select committee get to the truth here. And so the president is completely in agreement with Congress in this situation. So there simply is no separation of powers claim that that a former president can make that could...
But as part of evaluating the executive privilege, whether it is overridden, you typically do a balancing, just as was done in Nixon v. GSA. That's what we did in Senate Select Committee. And when you do a balancing, you weigh considerations such as the scope of the requests, the necessity of the information, and indeed, because of a ruling by our court, that there wasn't a necessity for the records, the court upheld the executive privilege claim in Senate Select Committee, right?
Your Honor, Senate.
If we start doing a balancing test, don't we have to consider things like that? Scope of the request, the necessity, burden, et cetera?
Your Honor, remember in Senate Select Committee was completely different. It was a sitting president. There was a clash between the branches. There was a separation of powers issue. There is none here. And so, no.
I don't understand your argument, counsel. You're saying that if a former president raises executive privilege, you don't do a balancing test, but if an incumbent president raises executive privilege, you do a balancing test.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. So, and here's why that makes perfect sense under Supreme Court doctrine, because we have one president. That one president is in charge of the executive branch. That one president, that president has done the balancing. It's up to that president to make the balance. That president has made the balance. And he said, part of what he said is the need here is extremely pressing. It's so great that this executive privilege is not appropriate here. As far as separation of powers, I'm going to say it one more time. Senate Select Committee is a completely different case, just as Mazars is a completely different case. There is no separation.
Different case because that involved a former president.
I'm sorry, which did?
Nixon v. GSA involved a former president, and they said there is a separation of powers concern here.
But again, they dealt with President Nixon's argument, and what I'm suggesting is it was in a different context, especially because, remember, here we have the incumbent president has actually looked at the documents and done the balancing. This isn't a constitutional claim facially against a brand new statute. This is about specific documents in a specific context.
So, Mr. Letter, at a minimum, even if you're right, or Judge Wilkins is right, that nevertheless, there's some balancing for the court to do in a situation like this. You say the incumbent president himself, in a situation that we are in, has done the balancing of the various factors that we would ordinarily do if it was actually a dispute between the legislature and the executive. So he's done it in this situation, and he agrees with the legislature. So you say that should be enough. If Judge Wilkins is right, that there's still something left for the court to do, at a minimum, would you say that we should give some deference to the incumbent's determination of this, even if he doesn't get to win it, right? Are we talking about, you know, either we have to give it all to the incumbent and we don't do any balancing, or I suppose there's a world in which we could say, okay, the court still has a role to play here in this current circumstance, but they have to give some deference, if not great deference, to the incumbent's determination of the balance.
Yes, Your Honor. And indeed, I'm trying to think of what the court order would be like in this case. The court would say, no, we know better than the current president does that Congress is not entitled to this material. I don't know what the why would be, I think all you could do is say, because the president's, there's a strong interest in the presidency in confidentiality and having presidential advisors being able to give clear advice. When the current president has said that's outweighed here, and remember, that really is about the only argument they're making. And remember, a very key point, Nixon versus GSA, US versus Nixon, and the practice of almost every modern president is they have disclosed to Congress and the public the advice they have gotten from high-level officials in the White House.
Counsel, you would concede that in any kind of clash between Congress and the president, where the president has invoked privilege and Congress was saying, we should get these documents, notwithstanding the executive privilege, because our need outweighs the interests of the executive, and you came to court, you would want us to overrule the incumbent executive's determination about the interests of the executive there so that you could get the documents, right?
Exactly as U.S. versus Nixon. You would do exactly what...
So you're saying that the court can overrule the incumbent president to give Congress documents, but the court can't overrule the incumbent president to say that Congress can't get documents. You want a one-way ratchet.
Yes, Your Honor, because again, remember, this is so essential. I cannot emphasize this enough. Remember that we're dealing with a question of are the branches in conflict with each other? In this case, the branches are not in conflict with each other. When the branches are not in conflict with each other, there is nothing really for this court to do as far as separation of powers. If the president and
the former president representing at least, you know, having some standing to speak up for the executive branch does say that there's a conflict.
And no, he can't say there's a conflict. He can say President Biden is wrong. President Biden doesn't know what he's doing. And so I want a court to tell President Biden, you are so far wrong that this requires the Article III branch to step in and override both the Article I branch and the Article II branch. I find it very difficult to come up with, as we talked before, of a hypothetical that is anywhere close to realistic when this court or any court would feel that it was appropriate to do that. When
even if you had four former presidents, you would still say the court could never find that they might have a better understanding or their views should merit more weight than the one incumbent president.
Oh, obviously, Your Honor, because only the current president knows the situation. Only the current president knows what is in the national security interests of the United States. Former presidents have no special knowledge. As I started out with, Chief Justice Marshall said, they go back to the private sector.
Well, I don't know why Nixon v. GSA was written the way that it was, why Public Citizen v. Burke was written the way that it was, why Nixon v. Freeman from our circuit was written the way that it was, because it might as well just say, you know, whatever the incumbent president says goes, and the former president's views have no weight.
As we've been discussing, We probably can come up with some hypotheticals where the former president's views would have weight. We probably can. I'm not aware of any that are realistic. And it seems to me that therefore, and I'm fairly sure that you're going to hear the exact same thing from Mr. Boynton. Therefore, there is no clash between the branches. When there is no clash between the branches and no private interest, remember, Nixon versus GSA, there was a private interest. In this case, Mr. Trump has said, I'm suing merely in an official capacity. So this isn't a question where the president and the Congress are getting together and ganging up on some private rights. So under those circumstances, this is not, there is, it would be astonishing for this court to override the current president and Congress. And I don't think that the Freeman case or the Burke case are in any way inconsistent with this. Those were cases where involving the what was to be done, how the former president's records were to be dealt with, what standards were to be applied within the executive branch, and private parties then were suing about that and arguing what should happen. And if I recall correctly, Nixon versus Freeman was about the very thing I was talking about before. President Nixon actually did have a private interest, and he got many millions of dollars from the United States government. But that has nothing to do with what we are talking about in this case. And obviously, in order to affirm the judgment below, this court does not have to say there are no circumstances we can conceive of when the former president might prevail. You don't have to do that. The key is here, did Judge Chutkan reach the correct result? And under the facts of this case, it seems to me that is indisputable. I had some notes here about some of the other questions that were asked. If you give me a second, I just want to skim them to say, I'm sorry, Judge Wilkins, you had asked my friend about would there be a situation when the court could issue a protective order that would bind Congress as far as what it could do with the documents. This, as we cited in our brief, this circuit's precedent, Hearst versus Black, says that you cannot. Under separation of powers, there is no Article III power for you to issue an injunction like that to Congress. So that's the law of the circuit.
No, but if there's an injunction, if the injunction is the archivist to provide it to a committee on these terms, right?
That injunction wouldn't bind Congress then.
That's not my question.
I'm sorry.
Yes. I'm sorry. The injunction would bind the person named it at the archivist. Are there rules within the House or for the committee that would, maybe they can't be enforced in litigation because of speech and debate clause, but are there internal rules that could be internally enforced that would give weight to that confidentiality agreement?
Different committees have different rules, Your Honor, about confidentiality.
What does the Select Committee have?
My understanding is the Select Committee has no rules about this on its own. The Select Committee is governed by the rules of the House. Mm-hmm. The rules of the House provide that records of a committee belong to the committee and they belong to the House. So the House could decide voluntarily to, if the archivist sent the records to Congress and said, I really, really hope you don't publicly disclose these. Congress, the House could make a determination of whether to abide by that or not, but that would be a decision by the House. I'm not aware that there's any rule that would govern what the Select Committee would do.
Let's not have the archivist just say pretty please. Let's say the incumbent president's decision says, I'm making this decision.
Right.
Based on accommodation between the branches, we've worked through this, we've had an agreement, and it is being provided subject to promises of confidentiality by the committee. And it's by the committee as an entity and each of its members.
And Your Honor, it is extremely likely that when accommodations like that are reached, Congress will abide by them. But neither the president nor the courts have any authority under the separation of powers to issue any kind of binding decision rule.
Well, I'm just asking what would happen Congress. In practice, would there be consequences if a member then breached that agreement? Would there be consequences for that member?
There could be consequences, yes. Remember that the speech or debate clause does not apply to Congress itself. So Congress could discipline a member who violates House rules about confidentiality.
Remove them from the committee. I'm sorry.
That's essentially what I was getting at. Yeah, you can't issue a protective order that binds Congress, but you could issue a protective order that says that the archivist can't disclose this to Congress unless and until there's an agreement about confidentiality that says X. And then maybe it can't be enforced in court, but just like any member of Congress can't take like some classified document that they got in the Intelligence Committee and decide to go out on the House floor and disclose that document because they think that the American people need to know it and do that kind of without any consequence, you could construct a scenario here that would protect these documents in a similar fashion, couldn't you?
Your Honor, I have to answer yes or no and say, yeah, you could construct something like that, and you presume, right, under law, you presume that Congress acts in good faith, and therefore it is, I would think, extremely likely that that agreement will be followed. If an individual member of Congress chooses to act in a renegade manner, as you know, there's nothing that the courts or the president can do about that. That's the framers made that decision. That's binding. Congress could discipline such a member. And so that is a way that Congress has of enforcing something like that. But I don't want to mislead.
Understood. But my point is that it's not inconceivable that the court could order terms of the disclosure by the archivist that would have some practical effect, even if they couldn't be enforced by contempt against Congress. But assuming that everybody is acting in good faith and abides by their agreements and isn't going to, you know, flout the law or the spirit of the agreement, that the court could place some limitations on the disclosure by the archivist that would, likely or more than likely ensure some restrictions in confidentiality, right?
Exactly, Your Honor. The way you framed it just then is key. And so, yes, I can agree with you on that. But remember, we're talking about a practical world here. The Select Committee, when it gets the material, it has to do something. It has to use these materials. That's the whole point of why these are being asked for. So the Select Committee would be looking at the materials. Their staff would be looking at the materials. Remember that the Select Committee then is making all sorts of recommendations to Congress as a whole, et cetera. But again,
understood. And I think our point with your friend on the other side, just to kind of bring this to a close in the interest of time, was that they never made any such request anyway, right? That issue isn't before us because they didn't ask for that limitation and say they would be fine with disclosure with that limitation or any other limitation. They just raised a broader objection to disclosure to Congress, right?
That's exactly correct, Judge Wilkins. You're 100% right on that.
Mr. Leonard, in the interest of time, I actually have two just sort of quick other points, if my colleagues will indulge them, which is, I'm trying to understand whether all of the PI factors at issue here actually turn on the likelihood of success on the merits. So that if we disagree with the former president's claim that he would win on the merits, does he necessarily lose the irreparable harm point because he's saying that he'll be harmed by the confidential nature, by the release of confidential documents, but the merits is the determination about whether or not he has the right to withhold them? And then what about the public interest and the balancing of the equities here? If he can't succeed, does he necessarily lose on that as well?
That's exactly, Your Honor, I think your observations here are very perceptive. Yes, in determining the merits there, I believe you would automatically then have ruled on those other two factors. As you know, the Supreme Court and this court have said, the public interest prong, it applies in a special way when you're dealing with the government, which we are dealing with here, the two branches. And yes, in order to have ruled that there was no likelihood or little likelihood of success, you would have held that there isn't an injury here to Mr. Trump, because that's not what executive privilege is, not for Mr. Trump. It's for the presidency.
All right. And then my only other question is about remedy. So if we were to affirm the district court's denial, I would think that the reasons for our administrative injunction preserving our jurisdiction would be resolved, and there wouldn't be any present need from our perspective, jurisdictional perspective, to maintain that temporary hold. So would we dissolve that injunction at that point? Would the records be released immediately? Should there be some consideration given to the right of the former president under that hypothetical situation for further review, or how should we think about that?
Your Honor, you would dissolve the injunction on this. I think this question has to be asked to Mr. Boynton, because as you know, the records are in the possession of the executive branch. We think that the stay or injunction pending appeal should be dissolved, and that the records can and should be turned over immediately. But as I say, we don't have the records. And I'm going to definitely be quiet in a second. I just want to point out one other thing, unless the court has other questions. There was talk about accommodations. Remember that in the Lassiter declaration, joint appendix, page 128, paragraph 25, he points out that there have been accommodations that are already being made between the executive branch and the legislative branch. And so that is the requirement.
There is a deferral of a request. What does the deferral of a request mean?
It meant that as you know, there are many, many records involved here. The archivist has agreed to examine them and turn over records on a rolling basis. So what the archivist suggested was that on certain records, we could defer them so that wouldn't get in the way of the archivist and the White House performing its function.
I'm going back to where I started. What does defer mean? That means the committee hasn't chosen not to pursue that claim, or is it withdrawing as to those documents?
No, there's no withdrawal.
They're tabled for now?
What you just said. Right. Yes, we're not withdrawing. We're saying yes. Well, those are put aside. So by agreement of the two branches, those are put aside, and it may very
well. For the time being.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, Your Honor, and it may be that is permanent. Then, when after this litigation is over, after the archivist has.
Where the President Biden may not push come to shove, may decide to assert privileges to those.
That can happen at any moment. Yeah, exactly, Your Honor. That can happen at any moment.
Deferral reserves the ability to, I guess I should ask Mr. Boynton, or he can tell me if I'm wrong, but deferral at this point certainly reserves the ability of the President Biden to assert privileges to those.
Absolutely.
And so should we be concerned as a practical matter about the court sort of interfering with this process of release and accommodation that is ongoing? I mean, is there some aspect of this that is kind of akin to, you know, do we have a final order? Are we in a place where the court can review privilege in a meaningful way without interfering with the processes that are ongoing in the negotiations between the legislative and the executive?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And as you, I believe Your Honor is very familiar with the Supreme Court decision in Eastland, where the Supreme Court made clear that the courts are to be extremely wary of issuing injunctions that interfere with an ongoing congressional investigation for legislative purposes. So yes, that's why we hope that this court will rule very expeditiously and will affirm Judge Chutkan and vacate the existing injunction, because this is interfering with something that is going on right now with immense speed. And these are key documents, as President Biden recognized, these are key documents that the Congress should have, and they should have them right now.
The committee have a sort of, it may not have a formal timetable, but a sense of when it needs to at least issue maybe a first report on this to allow legislation before the next election. I'm just trying to get a sense of the compressed time frame here.
Your Honor,
urgently, and we are too, but.
I have not heard Chairman Thompson or Vice Chair Cheney give any kind of dates. I'm not aware of anything that I would feel comfortable saying to the court as far as timing. It's just they're moving at breakneck speed. Thanksgiving has not slowed us down at all, sadly. So the select committee is moving very, very rapidly. So no, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of any time guidelines, et cetera, that the chairman has announced.
Right. My colleagues have further questions. All right. Thank you, Mr. Letter. We're just under an hour on you, so thank you for your time. Mr. Boynton, I hope you didn't make lunch plans.
Thank you, Your Honor. I did not make any lunch plans.
I apologize for the delay.
No problem. I'm happy to launch right into things here. Or if the court wants to take a quick break, that's okay too, however you prefer.
I'm ready to proceed. Are my colleagues ready to proceed?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Excellent. May it please the court, Brian Boynton from the Department of Justice. In light of the extraordinary events on January 6th and those surrounding it, President Biden made an affirmative determination that it would not be in the best interests of the United States to assert privilege with respect to the documents that are at issue here. That decision—
Just to be clear, the documents at issue here are the first three tranches?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's all that's at issue in this PI, and that's what we're here talking about. There will be more tranches to come, and those will be reviewed by the administration carefully, and determinations will be made then about whether or not to assert privilege. The accommodations process will occur. It has already been occurring, and it will continue. And there's every reason to think that some of the requests will be narrowed and that there may well be some assertions of privilege down the road. But at this point—
And you retain the ability to assert privilege. I just want to confirm that I'm correct in understanding that as to the documents that have already, there's already been a deferral on that preserves President Biden's ability to assert executive privilege at a later point.
That's correct. That deferral was part of the accommodation process. It means the documents have been tabled. At some point, the committee could decide to withdraw the request. The administration could decide to assert privilege. No decision has been made yet. But with respect to the documents that are at issue here, where President Biden has made an affirmative determination that it would be in the best interests of the United States not to assert privilege, this really should be a straightforward case. There are lots of difficult issues that we've discussed and we'll discuss further, I'm sure. But in the circumstances of this case, given the greater weight that is owed to the incumbent president's determination, President Biden's decision not to assert privilege was eminently reasonable and ought to be controlling. The court has asked some questions about your
decision. I don't mean to probe in a way that's inappropriate, but the former president raises concerns about the breadth of this request, and that, you know, it's the first three tranches seem pretty closely tied to January 6th and events between the election and January 6th itself. But that's certainly not the reach of this congressional request. It is much, much broader and going all the way back to April 2020. In making decisions on executive privilege, does the president include in that a judgment about the sort of statutory factors that are referenced in 2205, the congressional need and the availability of alternative documents, or is that something that the president, I guess, just leaves to the archivist?
Your Honor, those same criteria in the statute, you know, track the kinds of things you would look at generally in assessing whether Congress has authority to make a request to the executive branch, and the kinds of things that the executive branch would normally consider as part of the accommodations process. And so, yes, those are factors that will be considered in the ongoing discussions. You know, but is there a need for these documents?
Are they considered in the decisions already made as to the first three tranches, not to, if you can say, were they considered in determining not to exercise, invoke executive privileges to the first three tranches?
What I can tell you is that the documents, you know, were carefully reviewed, you know, by the White House, as reflected in the White House counsel's letter. A determination was made that Congress had a compelling need for these particular documents that are at issue. And so, yes, there has been a determination about the needs for these particular documents.
I thought that your brief was saying that kind of like a broader determination had been made by President Biden, which was that executive privilege was not going to be asserted for anything that fell within the scope of these requests, not just the first three tranches. Did I misread that?
Your Honor, so far the determinations that have been made to date relate to the particular tranches of documents at issue. There has not been a determination that every document that falls within the breadth of the requests would be disclosed, or that it would be in the interest of the United States not to assert privilege with respect to that broader set of documents. Those are determinations that will be made down the road.
What about the second statutory factor on alternative sources?
Your Honor, that is something that generally is considered as part of the accommodations process. There have not been any arguments that I'm aware of that the particular documents at issue in these first three tranches are ones that are readily obtainable from some other source. The former president in his brief makes arguments generally about the availability of documents from other sources, but does not make any particularized arguments about the documents at issue in these first three tranches. Down the road in future tranches, if there are arguments about the availability of documents from other places, yes, those are things that would be considered. I'm happy to continue along these lines. I'm also happy to discuss the jurisdictional and cause of action questions and then return to the executive privilege questions, however the court would like to proceed.
I'm going to ask you the same question I've asked everyone else, and that is, what is the position of the executive branch on the United States government on what courts are supposed to do if, assuming the statutory criteria are found to have been satisfied, at least as to these tranches, and we are left with the decision of the incumbent president that executive privilege is not warranted in this case, which Nixon versus GSA says at a minimum gets more points on the scoreboard. On the other hand, we have, you know, Nixon versus GSA talks about executive privilege, it diminishes over time, but this one is pretty quickly on the heels of former President Trump leaving in office. So I think on his side of the scale, although they have not argued this point, on his side of the scale, the recency of it has to count for something on the nature of his interests. And so, one, what is the legal test we should apply? Is it just the same balancing test we would do for Congress versus an incumbent president? And two, what, in whatever that test is, can you include what weight, deference, treatment, extra points is accorded to the incumbent president's decision?
Yes, Your Honor. So let me start first by saying we don't think it's the same test that applies when an incumbent is asserting executive privilege. This is a unique situation. We're not aware of any case that has dealt with a situation where a former president has asserted privilege and the incumbent president has made an affirmative determination not to assert privilege. This is different from Nixon versus GSA for the reasons that have been discussed. In that case, President Carter was defending the constitutionality of the statute and the general scheme, but there was no individualized evaluation with respect to particular documents. So therefore, there's no test existent in the case law for how to deal with this situation. Nixon versus GSA lays out a whole bunch of reasons why the incumbent's views ought to be given greater weight. The DC Circuit said the same thing in the Dellums case. One, this is a privilege that is held by the Republic, not by an individual. Two, the incumbent is in the best position to evaluate the costs and benefits of asserting privilege. Three, if there's a decision made not to assert privilege, the burdens of that fall on the incumbent. Four, the incumbent is the only politically accountable actor. And then fifth, it's the incumbent that is exercising the duties of the presidency. And in no other respect, this was discussed earlier, no other respect that we're aware of does a former president have the ability to block something the current president wants to do. The current president could decide to declassify information his predecessor had classified, withdraw state secrets privilege, withdraw from an executive agreement. It would be extraordinary in any of those circumstances to think that a former president could say, no, you cannot do that. So we think that whatever the—
Mr. Boynton, does that mean with all of those considerations taken into account, those aren't really particular to this set of records or this circumstance? They seem to suggest that in every situation, the incumbent would win. And is that your view? So we come to court, assuming the former president has the right to bring an action saying my view is different than the incumbent president's with respect to the exercise of executive privilege. Are you saying there really is no test to be applied in that circumstance? The court, based on the factors that you just articulated, says incumbent view wins.
It may well be the case that the incumbent is going to win most of the time, perhaps all of the time. We don't think this court should make that determination. We don't think you need to or should issue a ruling that says the incumbent always wins, because this is an unsettled area of the law, and there's no need to reach that conclusion here. We think instead—
What test do we apply? I'm back to where I started. So what test do you recommend we apply?
I recommend that the court review deferentially the incumbent's decision that it is in the interest of the United States not to assert privilege. I think that would be an appropriate test if the court were to determine that some test had to apply here. And that would mean—
Reviewing the decision like an APA type review? With deference, we're going to look and we're going to say, does this make sense to us? Or do we take that as a given and that judgment as a given, and then we just balance to see what's on the other side of the scales? Those are right. Two different ways of analyzing this.
I agree, Your Honor, and I don't think this would be like the APA. This is a very different context here. I think if there's any kind of review a court would engage in, it would have to be a highly deferential review that asks whether the decision could be objectively rational. It wouldn't be any inquiry into particular motivations. I don't think a court is in a position to do that. And it can't simply be some kind of de novo assessment of whether the court believes it's in the interest of the United States to disclose these documents. The incumbent president is uniquely well situated to make the determination about what's in the best interest of the United States. And so any kind of test here would have to be one that was extremely deferential and would only block an incumbent president in the most extreme cases. And I don't think the court should definitively hold that there are any cases in which the former's views should displace the incumbents. But I think the court could proceed under the assumption that there could be extreme circumstances in which the former would win, but then conclude that in the circumstances of this case, the incumbent's claim is rational on its face and is not one that the court is in a position to second guess. I think that's largely what the district court did here. And it seems like the right
approach. Rational on its face. So here we have a written explanation from the White House counsel. But what if the president gave no explanation, just said, I have determined in the exercise of my Article 2 responsibilities under the Constitution that this is not to be exercised in this case? Nothing else said.
Yes, so I don't think this is like APA review. There's no requirement for a written record. There's no requirement that...
How do we decide under your test that that decision is, I think what you said, objectively rational?
It could be similar to the way courts review legislation under a rational basis test, asking whether there's any conceivable basis on which the president could have decided that this was in the interest of the United States. I don't think it would be a test that looks at particular motivations. That would be impractical and intrude too greatly into the presidency.
You mentioned Dellums v. Powell. In Dellums v. Powell, we said, and this involved records of a former president, we said the various decisions concerning the privilege reflect a balancing approach, weighing the detrimental effects of disclosure against the necessity for production shown. And then after surveying the law and the record, we affirmed the district court, and we said, we were affirming a ruling of the district court that the plaintiffs established a specific need for the requested information sufficient to overcome the rebuttable presumption of privilege of a former president, assuming such a privilege exists. So the district court did a balancing test. We affirmed their balancing test, and we said, generally speaking, in determining privilege questions, executive privilege questions, we do a balancing test of kind of need versus and determine whether that overcomes the kind of intrusion on the office. So I don't understand why you say there's no balancing test that we do here.
Understood, Your Honor. I agree that if you were to determine that the former president has validly made an assertion of executive privilege, notwithstanding the fact that the incumbent has determined not to assert privilege, such that there was some executive privilege that had been validly asserted, then I think you would move to a balancing, like in Dellums or Nixon versus GSA, and you would look. It would be a different kind of balance than would occur if you have an incumbent who's asserting privilege, because the former's assertion would be due less weight, but there would be some kind of balance. What we're saying, though, is that in the circumstances of this case, you don't even need to reach the balancing. Dellums was a case like Nixon versus GSA, where the executive branch had not reviewed particular documents and made an affirmative determination not to assert privilege, that it's in the interest of the United States for the documents to be disclosed. In that case, the executive branch had resisted the subpoena, but had not asserted privilege, had just raised relevance grounds. You didn't have the same kind of affirmative determination by the president that it's in the interest of the United States to disclose the documents. So that's what we think makes this a different case, where you don't even need to get to balancing of confidentiality versus need. We think that in this case, the incumbent's view with respect to the assertion of the privilege ought to prevail. But this court can and perhaps should reach both conclusions and conclude that if there is an interest here on the part of the former president, that the need that Congress has asserted outweighs that interest. And I think, Judge Wilkins, you were correct earlier in your assessment of the D.C. Circuit precedent that that kind of balancing would happen on a global scale, not on a document by document scale. And that in the circumstances of this case, the congressional need would overcome whatever residual confidentiality interests there were on the part of the former president.
Mr. Boynton, can I just maybe say what I think I hear you saying in perhaps a different way, and you can help me to determine whether this is what you mean. That in a situation in which we have a determination by the incumbent president that the privilege is going to be waived, that these documents should be released. There is perhaps a separate separation of powers concern about the court coming in and making this decision to award it or to say the incumbent president has gotten it wrong and the former president's view should prevail, consistent with some balancing test that we invoke. That even if we would ordinarily just balance everything out in a world in which we were called upon by the separation of powers as between the two branches, right? If there was a conflict between the executive and the legislature and we were somehow called upon to resolve whether the document should be released, we under our precedent might do the balancing test or whatever is required to determine that outcome. But that in this situation, where there's not only the lack of a dispute between legislative and executive, we have the incoming executive having actually made a determination about whether the documents would be released. And so in this world, the court swooping in to do some sort of balancing test as we would in the other world actually raises its own separation of powers concerns in terms of the power of the court to resolve or to second guess what this executive is saying. Is that your position?
Yes, Your Honor. We agree that having a court try and referee this dispute between the incumbent and the former does raise those kinds of separation of powers concerns. And we made that argument in our brief. It's one of the factors we think should lead the court to determining that if there is any review here, it would need to be highly deferential and give significantly greater weight to the incumbent than to the former. And it's a reason, I think, that the court ought to decide that the incumbent's view, at least in the circumstances of this case, is controlling, and therefore that there's not a need for balancing. If you then go on to decide the balancing issue too, that may well be something you decide to do, and we would have no objection to that, but we don't think you need to reach the balancing issue.
There's your view or your response to my questions earlier about how to properly read Nixon v. GSA, because there, again, the claim was made that there was really no separation of powers issue raised because the then incumbent president agreed with Congress on the statute. And so to the extent that there's a question as to whether the statute raised any separation of powers concerns, that's resolved. And the court said, no, not so fast. We disagree.
Yes, Your Honor. I think there are two different things going on in Nixon versus GSA. There is a separation of powers challenge, and there's also an executive privilege assertion. It is completely ordinary for a court to still consider a separation of powers challenge to a statute, even if the executive branch is defending the constitutionality of the statute. The executive branch doesn't get to simply acquiesce in something that otherwise would violate separation of powers. The executive couldn't, for example, acquiesce to a line item veto power for Congress. A court still has to evaluate that challenge. Executive privilege, though, we think is different. Executive privilege is something that is vested in the executive branch for the benefit of the executive branch, and that where the incumbent president has made a determination that it is in the public interest not to assert the privilege, we think that that ought to be controlling at a minimum in the vast majority of cases and potentially in all cases. But again, that's an issue we don't think you need to reach. And so I agree the court in Nixon versus GSA did do that balancing, and it did it in the context of the separation of powers challenge. It also did it with respect to executive privilege. But with respect to executive privilege, our view is that the reason the court had to do that is because it wasn't a case like this where the executive, where you were dealing with particular documents and the incumbent president had made a determination that they should be disclosed. There was a separate argument that was raised by the former president in his reply brief that We haven't touched on today, but I would like to just mention it briefly because we haven't had a chance to address it. The reply argues that the PRA itself limits the ability of the incumbent to second guess a privilege assertion by the former. The former president points to the language that's existent in 2208 C2C and is also in the regs at 1270.44 F3 that talks about whether the incumbent president is going to not uphold a privilege assertion by the former. And they argue that not uphold has a specific meaning. And they say that that means the incumbent president can only assess whether the requirements for the invocation of privilege are met and doesn't allow an incumbent president to make a determination as occurred here that it's not in the interest of the United States to assert privilege. We think that argument is waived because it was raised for the first time in the reply brief. We also think it's demonstrably wrong. It's inconsistent with the PRA, which makes clear that the statute is not limiting either president's constitutional authority. That's in 2204 C2, I believe. And there's also nothing in the text of the language not uphold that says that what the incumbent is allowed to do is only determine the legal validity of whether a document potentially could be subject to a claim of privilege. And there are no cases supporting this not uphold argument as well. And it's also contrary to the legislative history of 2208. There's a House report and a Senate report, neither of which give any indication that 2208 was designed to limit the authority of the incumbent president. In fact, it's to the contrary. They talk about how the process there mirrors the process in the Reagan and Obama executive orders, which gave more authority to the incumbent president by making disclosure the default in a circumstance where the incumbent president has decided not to invoke the privilege. So that was just a new argument in the reply brief that I wanted to touch on. It relates...
Did you want to finish up that point? Go ahead.
No, I was done with that. I was going to transition to some of the other statutory issues, so I'm happy to pause for questions.
Yes, back to discussing sort of the court's role in this, can you help me understand from the executive branch's view what the nature of a former president's continuing executive privilege interest is? It's not any personal interest in confidentiality. You know, I promised someone I wouldn't say that. It's nothing personal like that. They've made it quite clear this is an official capacity privilege. And GSA says, it's not to try to second guess or override the assessment of the interests of the United States or the executive branch, because we nod to the incumbent on that. So what exactly is the interest?
That's a good question. And you're exactly right that it is not a personal interest. Nixon versus GSA makes it very clear that it's an interest of the executive branch. There might be circumstances where the importance and confidentiality of particular documents is not apparent on their face. You could have documents that, in fact, are highly sensitive and should not be disclosed. And perhaps the incumbent wouldn't be in a position to recognize that from the face of the documents. And the former might say, oh, no, you should be aware these are highly sensitive documents that you ought to consider very closely. So I think that's one reason to give a former president a role. It might be the most important reason, their familiarity with these particular documents. It gives them a way to make sure that the confidentiality interests are at least flagged and taken into account by the incumbent.
That already happens in the, I don't know whether to call it the administrative process here, but the, where the archivist alerts the former president and the incumbent president and looks like at least gives the former president a little lead time. And so anything like that would have already been communicated between under the statutory scheme here and under the regulations would have already been communicated to the incumbent. And I guess when of course, assume that that was factored in when the incumbent president makes a decision. So when the former president shows up in court, what interests do they, if there is a balancing, what interests are they supposed to put on the table?
So there is a question about the circumstances in which a former president can, in fact, come to court to assert privilege. But let's assume for current purposes that 2204E does permit a former president to bring an action in court to challenge, to bring an executive privilege challenge.
And you haven't challenged that thus far in this litigation. So
Correct.
At this stage are accepting the cause of action.
Correct. That is correct with respect to an assertion of executive privilege. We have argued that there is no cause of action for the former president to bring a challenge either to the statutory requirements in 2205-2C or to the authority of the committee under the Constitution to bring the valid legislative purpose type arguments. But we do think that there is a cause of action recognized in 2204E to assert executive privilege. And in that, in those sorts of cases, the former president could make these kinds of arguments I alluded to a minute ago, that there are particular confidentiality interests inherent in particular documents. That has not occurred here, right? There's been no particularized arguments with respect to specific documents. In theory, that could happen. I'm not saying that
the former president is part, whatever this residuum of executive privilege is, also assert that the appropriate thing for courts to do is a balancing test, like Judge Wilkins has raised questions about, and that requires, as part of that analysis, an inquiry into the nature of the legislative interest that may well parallel the 2205 factors.
I agree that if a court concludes that there has been a valid assertion of executive privilege, even by the former, and that balancing is appropriate, that balancing of the qualified privilege would look at some of those same issues with respect to the congressional need. I was going to return, this is a related point, but you had asked some questions earlier about how could it possibly be that the incumbent always wins when we have a statutory scheme that seems to envision that the former president can go to court to bring an executive privilege assertion. There are a couple of arguments there that I think are important to consider. One is that the only statutory provision that expressly seems to contemplate a challenge by the former president in a circumstance where the incumbent has either decided not to invoke privilege or stayed silent is 2208C2C. But the way that statutory provision works is it actually allows it requires the archivist to disclose if either of two things happen, either the incumbent decides not to assert privilege or the incumbent does nothing. And it says if either of those two things happen, then the former can go to court to assert executive privilege. So it may well be that Congress was contemplating the former would go to court when the incumbent is silent. It doesn't necessarily have to be the case that Congress believed that a former could displace an affirmative determination by the incumbent.
Except it might all. And there are two different provisions. There are two different clauses in that statute, right?
So yes.
You're saying both of them mean the incumbent says nothing, but how can that be? Doesn't that render one of them superfluous?
Yes, so there are, right, earlier, Judge Jackson, you had pointed to the second clause, which is, or by a court order in another action in any federal court.
I'm sorry, before you get to that, I'm talking about, it says, if incumbent president determines not to uphold the claim of privilege asserted by the former president, or fails to make the determination under this paragraph.
I see.
I just understood you to say that both of those somehow encompass only the scenario in which the incumbent president doesn't speak. But isn't the first one the incumbent president saying, I am not going to uphold this claim of privilege, I'm going to waive it? And then the second one is he's silent.
Yes. So
if I'm right about that, what do we do with the first one? And how is that consistent with what you've just said?
Yes. So the way it's drafted, it may just be that that Congress meant that the former president could go to court in these general circumstances when one of these two things has happened. It may be that Congress envisioned that the former president could go to court even when we're in that first clause, the incumbent has made a decision not to assert privilege. And that determination, I think, would be consistent with the general approach of the PRA, which was to leave executive privilege law where Congress found it. It was neither expanding nor contracting either president's rights to assert executive privilege. And so Congress was recognizing that a former president could go to court and make whatever arguments are available to the former president. It may well be that when you have a situation that the incumbent has made an affirmative decision not to assert, that the former's right to assert executive privilege is either non-existent or quite minimal. But that's something that Congress left to the courts to sort out.
So you're saying that we should not be reading this statutory circumstance as necessarily Congress saying that when both presidents are in court, because the incumbent has said, I'm not going to assert, I'm going to waive, and the former says, I really think we need to insert it here, and so I'm going to court. So both of them are there. You're saying this doesn't speak to or suggest that they have equal, their position should be given equal weight by the court, and that we should just do the same balancing test we would do in another circumstance as though the incumbent never said anything. Is that what you're saying? I say the same thing in different ways, and I'm wasting everybody's time, but is that what you're saying?
No, that is correct, Your Honor. I am saying that when they're both in court, it certainly is not equipoise where you look at both claims of privilege equally. Our view is that the incumbent's position is entitled to significantly greater weight. I was also making a point even a step further to say that the fact that the former can go to court doesn't even necessarily mean that the former can ever win in these circumstances where an incumbent has made an affirmative decision not to assert privilege. It may be that Congress left that as an open question. And as I said before, I think that's something this court leave as an open question as well.
Rather extraordinary. It seems rather extraordinary to go to the trouble twice of talking about these actions that a former president can bring, and for the Supreme Court to have expressly said in terms that the former president has an interest under executive privilege that can be enforced in court. It said it in terms in that case when it was it's going to be an entirely empty exercise at the end of the day. But, you know, just to make things more interesting, let's bring Article 3 into the picture. That seems to me the exact opposite of how we should, you know, we don't assume Congress is creating constitutional problems with the statutes that it writes. And I'm certainly not going to assume that the Supreme Court thought it was creating, you know, more opportunities for the judiciary to step into fights between, or actually to unsettle agreements between the executive branch in Congress. And it seems to me that part of, I'm assuming what was going on, and this is just assumption, I assume you would agree on behalf of your current clients that you know, the executive privilege is really important. It's part of the lifeblood of the executive branch, and the ability to exercise Article II powers depends, or to exercise them wisely, depends on having confidentiality. And if we have a constitutional scheme in which that privilege turns off at 12:01 p.m. January 20th, it won't be a real privilege at all for the preceding 4 years. It won't, because everyone will know it's the clock is ticking. And, you know, God bless the president who tries to get confidential advice on something imperative on January 19th, because everyone's going to know, well, tomorrow it's coming out. And so my sense is that the Supreme Court was not playing games and was recognizing that there has to be, the only way we can think to ensure that this executive privilege remains real and doesn't expire, it doesn't have a clock ticking on it the entire time, is to allow for some way of vindicating executive privilege that goes beyond the minute a president becomes a former president. And that's why they talk about it dissipating over time. And if that's what the Supreme Court was conceptualizing there, maybe I'm all wrong, you can tell me that, but if that's sort of what they were concerned about there, I still haven't heard you or anyone address on Mr. Trump's side of the scale here that this is, these requests are coming in pretty quickly on the heels of him having assumed the title of former president. And how does that factor in either into your defer to the executive analysis or the incumbent analysis or a balancing test?
This administration and the executive branch takes very seriously executive privilege and understands the value of it. And there's no indication that this administration or prior administrations has willy-nilly disclosed privileged information where there's not a basis to do so. Many prior administrations have made determinations in specific circumstances like Watergate or the Iran-Contra affair or 9/11 that the administration is not going to assert what would otherwise be a valid executive privilege because of the circumstances of the case. And that's what's happened here with respect to the January 6th investigation. There are other requests that Congress is making for information from the executive branch right now where privilege is being asserted and the accommodations process is occurring. And this administration is not just handing over information to a supposedly friendly Congress, but the circumstances in this case are extraordinary and involving an attack on the Capitol and the events surrounding it.
Right. That sounds like a much more nuanced analysis than deferring because the decision's not irrational.
Your Honor, I agree that this is a relatively straightforward case. We think the court ought to avoid deciding the really difficult cases where a decision not to assert might be more questionable than the decision here. It's very difficult to figure out in advance what that test would look like, and it's difficult to say with certainty that a former president, in fact, can displace the judgment of an incumbent. And so our view is that that's an issue that ought to be left open for the hard case that follows and doesn't need to be resolved in this, you know, comparatively more straightforward case.
So suppose you have a congressional request for a former president's documents, and the former president says, "I'm not asserting privilege. Congress, you can have all of them." And the incumbent president says, "No, I think that that's not in the best interest of the executive. I assert privilege as to all of the documents." And Congress sues. We apply the same test in that case that you say we should apply in this case?
No, for a couple of reasons. One, the incumbent's views, I think, are entitled to greater weight than the former's. Second, I don't think there's any indication in the PRA or in the executive orders that an incumbent's decision to assert executive privilege ought to be displaced by a former's decision not to assert executive privilege. The way they work is that if the incumbent asserts executive privilege, the document doesn't go out, and Congress could try to make arguments that it has a need for the documents, in which case, if Congress has an ability to bring that action in court, which is an open question in which we contest, but if they are allowed to bring that in court, they would have to satisfy the traditional balancing standard under the Senate Select Committee case.
I was confused by, so in Judge Wilkins' hypothetical, I think Congress gets the documents, right? Or maybe they don't. The incumbent president is saying, I don't think we have an executive privilege issue. I'm going to waive. And the former president says we shouldn't do that. Under the way the statutes and the law works now, absent a court order, those records would go out, right? So there would be no basis for the Congress to be suing.
No, my hypothetical was that Congress wants documents. The former president says you can have them. The incumbent president says, no, I'm invoking privilege.
I see.
And Congress sues, and we have to decide whether Congress gets the documents.
I see.
And so your answer to my question is that ultimately we would do the balancing like Senate Select Committee. We wouldn't just defer to the executive because we'd have to make the call as to whether or not Congress's need for the documents overrides the privilege, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's a qualified privilege and can be overcome. And so the court would go through that exercise, assuming there was a basis for the House to go to court.
And we would have a dispute between the branches in that situation.
Correct.
And so it's your position that there is no dispute between the branches here, and that's why we use a different test?
That's correct, Your Honor. With respect to at least these first three tranches of documents, there is no dispute between the branches. There is a dispute between the presidents, the former and the incumbent. But in our view, the incumbent's position is given significantly greater weight than the former's, and therefore the traditional Senate Select Committee test is not appropriate in our view.
My colleagues have any more questions?
No.
Thank you very much. Mr. Clark, am I right in understanding that you're the one that's providing rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and we will.
And I'll be very brief because I really only have one point I want to bring up that wasn't raised in our briefs.
So I have to give you some time first. So just for the record, if I can say, I will give you 4 minutes.
All right, I appreciate that, Your Honor. I want to address Judge Jackson's hypothetical regarding the current administrative stay that's in place. And considering the weight of the issue, the former president would need and request some period of time, not a long period of time, to consider and request another administrative stay or injunction pending appeal. Again, we're not talking about a huge period of time, but some period of time if the court were to rule as in the hypothetical that Judge Jackson indicated.
Period of time for what?
File an administrative stay pending appeal from this court in the event of the government winning this appeal and the administrative stay dissolving. There was a discussion about immediate release. I'm just saying we would request some period of time within which for us to file a motion for a stay, some other motion, and
if you're requesting time, we don't need to give you time to file a motion for time. Normally what happens is someone requests a window to file a petition for certiorari. In a case like this, where everything is very, very urgent on a very tight timeline, and everyone needs to proceed as fast as possible. I know that's what happened in the Mazars case. They asked for a very concrete period of time to file certiorari petition or something like that. Is that what you're alluding to?
That's what I'm alluding to. I just want to alert the court that we would.
What kind of time?
I mean, it would probably be
14 days, I think, in that case.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were just nodding at each other about. 14 days seems right to be able to get a cert petition.
We're not there yet.
Not there yet. Sure, it was brought up.
Your first argument is we should win.
That's right. I'd be remiss to not bring it up because it was discussed. Yes, that's
absolutely
all. But other than that, we're willing to rest on our briefs on this argument.
Do my colleagues have any more questions?
No.
I have one short one. The statute and regulations allow asserting a claim but not as to segregable portions of the record. So if you've got something that a portion is executive privilege, but there's another portion that could be released, you have to do that. As to the three tranches that have been reviewed, and then as within those group, those documents, the documents as to which former President Trump has asserted executive privilege in his official capacity, as to those documents, are you representing to this court that they've been carefully examined to determine not only that they qualify in former President Trump's judgment for executive privilege status, but there is nothing segregable?
Within the documents.
Each document, yes.
Yes, that's right, Your Honor. That's my understanding, and I believe that's correct. So.
Okay. If there are no further questions, then the case is submitted. Our thanks to all counsel for your time and careful and thoughtful presentations. Very helpful to the court.
Thank you, Your Honor.